might be taken, Prime Minister.
But if you are marching with people wearing pictures of paragliders without calling it out, you are venerating the murder of Jews.
Metropolitan Police Commissioner Sir Mark Rowley will join us straight after the news as he attacks the Green politician Zach Polanski for his views on that arrest. Meanwhile, the suspect has been charged and security level of the country has moved to the second highest, to severe. In other news, a May Day revolution in the field of rental property. Housing Secretary Steve Reid.
They will ban unfair, so-called no-fault evictions, where landlords kick people out just so that they could put the rent up for new tenants.
And so-called Trumpflation, what could it mean for the cost of living here in the UK? 7 o'clock news on LBC is next.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 7 o'clock. In the past hour, a man has been charged with attempted murder after a double stabbing in Golders Green. Two Jewish men were attacked on Wednesday morning and one remains in hospital. The UK's terror threat level has been raised to severe as a response. At Downing Street last night, the Prime Minister promised to step up security.
I call on everyone to come together and fight anti-Semitism. And I call on everyone to fight for the decent, respectful, tolerant Britain that I and millions of people love.
45-year-old Essa Suleiman is due to appear at Westminster Magistrates Court later. 11 million private renters across England have stronger rights from today as the Renters' Rights Act comes into force. It's being described as the biggest shake-up to renting for more than 30 years. Emily rents a property in Devon and has recently been subject to a no-fault eviction.
We were in the property for 5 years, got served our Section 21. It's made me feel really insecure. It scares me, the idea of going back into rentals, like there's no security. Yeah, no choice, no options. And I feel like this is why a lot of people are being served Section 21s now.
The King and Queen have said they will leave a piece of their hearts in the US after their four-day state visit. King Charles has now arrived in Bermuda for a trip around the island. Donald Trump has announced he'll remove tariffs on Scottish whisky after their visit. A think tank is calling for the triple lock pension to be replaced with a system which allows people to access cash earlier in life. The Tony Blair Institute says the current scheme is outdated and increasingly unaffordable. It's arguing for a new lifespan fund to be established instead. And Britney Spears has been charged with driving under the influence in Southern California. She was stopped by police in March. Her lawyers are likely to appear in court for her on Monday. In the city, the FTSE 100 will reopen at 10,361 after closing up 148 points yesterday. The pound buys $1.35 and a euro 15. LBC weather, a warm start across the UK with lots of sunny spells. A few showers moving eastwards later with a high of 24 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Lottie Morley.
You know what you're getting with a wedding? Wedding hats. A baby in a waistcoat crying throughout the vows. Themed tables. Awkward best man speech. The plus one.
Hello.
People dancing in a circle. Ruined rental suit. Sometimes in life you just know what you're getting. Like a luxury bed and a great night's sleep. You know what you're getting with Premier Inn.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call and WhatsApp message now 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
Good morning to you. 3 minutes after seven, Friday the 1st of May. We would normally lay out what's coming up ahead in the show, but we have the opportunity to go straight to the Commissioner of the Metropolitan Police, Sir Mark Rowley. So let's use that privilege now. Sir Mark, thank you for coming on the show. Good morning, Sir Mark. As you've just heard on our news bulletin, we have elevated the status from substantial to severe for a terror threat. What has informed that? Is that solely based on events in Golders Green or other matters? Good morning to you.
Morning. So it's the wider context. We've got an increasing caseload in our counter-terrorism teams. dealing with sort of Islamist terrorist activity. That's about three quarters of the workload. Extreme right wing terrorist activity. Obviously, there's a wider context of hostile states driving issues as well, which adds to that. That combined picture has tipped the threat level up a notch to severe, which means attacks are highly likely in the next few months. We've been putting immense resources into Northwest London, protecting Jewish communities over the past few weeks, which I know community leaders have noticed, and we're really determined to sustain that level of protection for Londoners.
Is the Jewish community under attack in this country, Sir Mark?
They're certainly under threat, absolutely. The sustained series of arsons we've seen, and then this horrific attack on Wednesday night, awful for the victims and their families, it's very much targeted at Jewish communities. I think we have to recognise that what police are dealing with and what we're trying to protect communities against, we're dealing with the symptoms of a disease, of a pandemic perhaps, of anti-Semitism, which has been building over many years. The statistics on anti-Semitic attitudes in society are horrific and rising, and that needs tackling upstream, and I know government are looking at that. Meanwhile, I need the resources and the capability to protect Londoners. And on Wednesday night, after the awful attack, we put a proposal into the government how we can make the temporary extra resources we're putting into North West London and around Jewish communities permanent, because dragging resources across London isn't the best solution long term, isn't sustainable, but a permanent local team supported by experts in firearms in those areas could make a real sustained difference for those communities.
Well, is there an argument, Sir Mark, that funding should have been made available to you prior to the incident in Golders Green? Perhaps they didn't give you enough cash for resources then, Sir Mark?
I'm leading a shrinking organisation. That's the decision of successive chancellors. I have to deal with that. That's been really challenging. I'm proud of what officers have done to be able to keep London getting safer and safer in terms of overall crime levels. But we need to target those most at risk. The Jewish community suffer far more hate crime per capita than any other community in London. So we're going to tip more resources towards it, and we need government support to make that sustainable.
I hear you say under threat. So it is under attack then, isn't it, Sir Mark?
We've had an attack this week, and we've had several attacks in the last few weeks, haven't we, with those arsons. It's very clearly targeted, and it's very frightening, and you can understand how Jewish communities feel.
You reference your pride in the men and women who serve under you, and that's come through in your determination to tackle a politician who has retweeted a post, this is Zach Polansky from the Green Party, criticising officers for, and I swear, repeatedly and violently kicking a mentally ill man in the head when he was already incapacitated by taser. Charges have, of course, now been brought, and you'll be far more aware of what that means to this conversation than most, but what would you say to Mr. Polansky? What would you say to the officers? Was it acceptable behaviour?
I sat down with the officers on Wednesday afternoon, a couple of hours after the attack, and you could still see they were shaken. They'd taken on a terrorist, and as that incident developed, they were afraid because he didn't comply at all. Even after being dropped to the floor by a taser, they were afraid that he might have an explosive device on him from the way he was behaving. He didn't in the end, and of course they used a lot of force. I'm not interested in politics, but if somebody eminent rather than some of the oddballs on social media. If someone eminent says something or does something which I see has a risk to undermining the confidence of my officers to act, because they need that sense of public support, then I need to intervene on that, and that's what I did with that letter.
Noting that he could have had an explosive vest, noting that the officer's hands are obviously being deployed to try and hold the man, to the suspect, yeah. I must be careful, the suspect. Is it necessary to kick him in the head, though, Commissioner?
They're using the force that they see necessary in that split second. Nick, unless you've been in that moment where you're scared stiff and you're confronting somebody so dangerous, it's hard to put yourself in that situation. They're desperately concerned about stunning him and sort of neutralising him, and I can understand the officers are going to sort of improvise to the best of their ability.
Commissioner, there is also a possibility he have an explosive vest on him as well, so they're pretty brave to even tackle him in the...
Well, exactly. Can you imagine being in that situation without a firearm? It is the most extraordinary bit of policing, and I need officers to see that they are going to get my support and public support for that. And that's interesting, the correspondence with Zach Polansky, that the support it's received online from the wider community is really heartwarming for officers to see.
Is Mr. Polansky being ignorant, rabble-rousing? What's he doing?
That's for others to talk about that. I'm just dealing with the confidence of my officers to protect the public.
When is the next march planned for London, Commissioner?
There's some big marches planned for 2 weeks tomorrow, the 16th. I'm concerned about the scale of those in this context, and we're looking hard at sort of what conditions and powers we should use in respect of those events. As I think you know, Nick, protests can't be banned. Parliament has made it clear they can't be. What we can do, we can restrict how a march takes place, and in the most extreme circumstances, and it's a very high bar, we can restrict it to a static event alone, and we're looking at all possibilities and what's appropriate in this circumstance.
I mean, there are some voices, Commissioner, who would go further, and there should be a temporary, I repeat that word, a temporary pause on these sort of demonstrations to take some of the heat out of the situation. Surely that's something that should be considered.
That's a matter for Parliament. That's not within the law. I have no power to do that. If Parliament wanted to do that, then of course we would sort of execute on the decision they made.
You went to the area shortly after the incident earlier this week, and you received a hostile reception. How did that make you feel?
I received a lot of support from most Jewish community leaders. They've seen the effort officers have made. They're very grateful and they're very supportive. Of course, there are some who are angry and upset. And we've just seen two Jewish men attacked in the street with a knife because of who they are, because of their faith. That's frightening, upsetting. Of course, that's going to generate high emotions. But what I've seen over recent weeks is continued support from Jewish community leaders who've seen the difference that local extra patrols have made, and they can see we're trying everything we possibly can do.
I've got a last minute with you. Noting there has now been a charge, how well is the PREVENT programme working in your view, Commissioner?
So there's no diversion programme for any type of crime, whether it's diverting people out of gangs or out of extremism, that will ever be 100% successful. It has a lot of successes. I'm sure there's ways it can be improved further.
Finally, what do we need to do? As you move the level up to severe, we know what the men and women brave enough to serve under you need to do, whether in or out of uniform. What do we need to do, Commissioner?
There's two things. There's the practical about being alert. So don't be alarmed, don't be afraid, but be alert and help us by giving us information. Secondly, I think everybody should reflect on the levels of anti-Semitic attitudes in society, and we should all call it out because these are British Jews. Israeli foreign policy, however much you may like or dislike that, that is not relevant in terms of attitudes to British Jews who should be treated like any other British citizen.
Really appreciate your time this morning. I know you're a very busy individual. Good luck to the men and women serving under you, particularly those in those areas. Sir Mark Rowley is Commissioner of the Metropolitan Police, 11 minutes after 7. There are so many aspects to discuss, but I think the first one is the row involving Zach Polanski. Sir Mark Rowley accusing him in an email that sent a letter he sent of inflaming tensions, saying the Green Party leader sharing inaccurate and misinformed social media posts about how officers arrested. We have to tread carefully now, someone who has been charged in connection, because that has happened within the last half an hour or so. But I can tell you that in Mr. Polanski's view, as officers repeatedly and violently kicking a mentally ill man in the head when he was already incapacitated by taser. Just put yourself in the position of those officers, as I was just discussing with the Commissioner, and again, we have to go carefully, but it is believed that the suspect has been involved in stabbing of people on the street. It is believed the suspect could possibly have some kind of vest on him. Well, he's not going to just give up easily, is he? The police officer's hands are all used in trying to restrain him and trying to put handcuffs on, or those plastic locks or whatever they were using. They've got nothing else, have they? You only have one pair of hands. Surely you can see that. You have to question the motivation of Zach Polanski in all of this. Deliberately causing trouble? Well, the commission didn't want to go that far. Ignorant? I can. Utterly ignorant. And I've been out on a few police operations. Nothing like this. But I've seen when it gets a bit bouncy. It is very, very... what's the word? Not scared. Frightening. It's very, very challenging. Not frightening. Frightening for me because I'm a civilian. Challenging for coppers because they're trained. That is the reality of it. You might want to speak about that. But we do need to update you with what's been happening up at Golders Green. The Prime Minister deciding to visit Golders Green yesterday and was met with a hostile reception. And you can hear that, Keir Starmer, Jew Harmer. Subsequently, he made this address from Downing Street yesterday evening.
I call on everyone to come together and fight anti-Semitism. And I call on everyone to fight for the decent, respectful, tolerant Britain that I and millions of people love.
Well, you may call on everyone, Prime Minister, but I think a lot of people call on you to ban the IRGC. There was no point asking the commissioner that respectfully, because he'll say it's a political decision, and he's absolutely right, to ban associated organisations and to take a very close look at whether those marches should go on. And I remind you again, we have a state broadcaster that put to air live a musician, I'm not going to give their names, musician chanting about killing Israeli soldiers. No action was taken. Maybe there should be action taken there. The Prime Minister also hinted at a possible ban on those marches I've just referenced.
Take the marches that happen regularly across Britain. Of course we protect freedom of speech and peaceful protest in this country. But if you are marching with people wearing pictures of paragliders without calling it out, you are venerating the murder of Jews. If you stand alongside people who say globalise the Intifada, you are calling for terrorism against Jews. And people who use that phrase should be prosecuted. It is racism, extreme racism.
Well, it's only taken 2.5 years for the penny to drop for the Prime Minister. We're hearing from one of his colleagues later in the show. Coming up after news, obviously getting into comments about Zach Polanski, hugely ill-informed and ignorant, I would suggest, and also so-called spectre of Trumpflation. We'll tell you what that means for you. It's 7:15, LBC News headlines, read by Lottie Morley.
A man has been charged with attempted murder after a double stabbing in Golders Green. 11 million private renters across England have stronger rights from today. And the King and Queen have said they will leave a piece of their hearts in the US after their four-day state visits. LBC weather, a warm start across the UK with lots of sunshine and a high of 24 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. There are delays of about 6 miles on the M25 clockwise at junction 10 at the A3. There's been an accident and two lanes remain closed. Anti-clockwise is open, but it's very busy all the way back to the M3 at junction 12 because of onlookers. Also on the M25, it's very busy clockwise heading towards junction 1A. So that's just after the end of the QE2 bridge, and that's where a car has broken down. In Camden, Chalk Farm Road remains closed southbound, and that's because a bus has broken down. And problems now in Woolwich. Woolwich New Road is partially blocked northbound because a van has broken down. On the Underground, no Northern Line running between Finchley Central and Mill Hill East because the fire alarms are going off at Mill Hill.
This is LBC.
At Tesco, we know that right now every little helps. That's why we've made Aldi Price Match available in over 2,000 Tesco Express stores. Price matching on essentials so you can bag the basics with confidence. When every penny counts, just look out for the Aldi Price Match logo next time you nip into your local Express. Tesco, every little helps. Prices checked and matched in Aldi stores and online twice weekly. Pro rata excludes promotions. Selected products excludes Northern Ireland and Woosh. See tesco.com/Aldi Price Match.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060973. LBC.
Take Irish Ferries from Dover to Calais, where your pet travels in the pet lounge. You'd be barking not to. Irish Ferries. See travel differently.
Get that Euro Millions feeling with Friday's £34 million jackpot. Plus, 10 UK winners are guaranteed to be millionaires. That's 10 more reasons to dance. 10 more robots. 10 more limbos. 10 more salsas. Friday's EuroMillions jackpot is £34 million and 10 UK winners are guaranteed to be millionaires. EuroMillions from the National Lottery. It could be you. Estimated jackpot. Rules apply. 18 plus.
Oh, you want weight loss advice?
Weight loss? Actually, what you want to do is...
I got my weight loss secret from my mother, who got it from her mother's
weight loss?
Or you could go to MedExpress. MedExpress. Healthcare without the noise. Go to medexpress.co.uk/weightloss.
Ali 60 milligram hard capsules contain orlistat for overweight adults with a BMI of 28 plus. Follow a reduced calorie, low fat diet. Always read the label.
Are you ready for the McCrispy to become your new go-to? With juicy 100% chicken breast. One bite and your usual becomes your used to. Betray your go-to for McCrispy.
McCrispy.
Now at McDonald's. Served from 11 a.m. Subject to availability.
It's 18 minutes after 7. Apologies there. Seems to be a slight bump in the road. Let's get moving and tell you what the front pages are saying. A couple of them I can't read out because events have changed. As I say, within the last hour or so, charges have been brought. So, with the greatest respect, there's some punchy headlines there for the Daily Mail and others, but I can't actually read them because we, and the Daily Express, because we have moved on, and I'm sure the journalists there would understand. What I can say is give you the Daily Telegraph. Met accuses Polanski of stoking tensions. Indeed, that's what calls are coming in about, and we'll come to you in just a moment on that. The Daily Mirror, an attack on all of us, says the PM. Do you remember we played bingo yesterday? And an attack on one is an attack on all. Our thoughts and prayers are with the victims. Anti-Semitism has no place. This is just words again from the Prime Minister. Back up for more actions. The Sun, I'm afraid I can't give you too much again because charges have been brought. But we can tell you that the Times is saying the UK terror threat severe after anti-Semitic attacks. We've also heard, it's interesting the word used initially, he agrees there's a threat to the Jewish community, the Commissioner. But he didn't resign from the fact that they're under attack. And sadly, and if you listen to me for any time, you'll know that I know many, many, and count many Jewish people here as my friends in this country. I think they are under attack. The LBC app tells you also terror threat level raised to severe. Just to remind you, the last time that happened was in 2021 after the murder of the MP Sir David Amos, and of course that explosion outside the hospital in Liverpool. So it's been 5 years, and there are five levels, by the way, just to give you some background: low, moderate, substantial, which is where the nation was, severe, where we find ourselves this morning, and then up to critical. Martin's in Rotherhithe. Your reaction? Now, we have to tread carefully because there are charges, and no one would want to prejudice a trial, but your reaction to what the politician has been saying? Good morning.
Morning, Nick. How are you?
All right, thank you. Well, concerned, but I'm all right, personally.
Yeah, I find Zach Polanski's comments pretty disgusting. Same. I mean, but it's not really surprising because this is generally what the hard left tend to do. You know, instead of looking at a...
Oh, sorry, Martin, I'm going to have to shout over you there because we cannot say that that took place now because there are charges that have been brought and I know you would not want to prejudice the trial. So you carry on, but if I suddenly talk over you, it's not rudeness, I just have to protect the legal process.
I understand.
Okay, on
you
go.
I understand.
Good, sir.
Well, as I was saying, what the left do is rather than what happened, they'll look at it through the lens of identity politics. And in their eyes, they see a man of colour being attacked by a police officer. And that's what they do. They like to play the identity politics card. And we all know what the motives are, just because we've got big elections next week, and he's using something like this to score political points.
Let me ask you this, Martin. Up until a year or so ago, if I'd asked you what were Green Party policies, I would imagine you'd have talked about protecting the environment and whatever. I don't think you would necessarily talk about declassifying or legalising all drugs, up to and including heroin.
Well, it goes to show you just how things have changed. I mean, I've had Green Party activists in the past knocking on my door because of the part of London I live in, and they used to be middle-class women called Tabitha that were interested in the environment. They're not anymore.
A massive sea change in the party. Martin, thank you for that. Paul, you will be the next call. I want to hear from you. I just want to read this out. Almost as the Commissioner was leaving our Westminster studio, Ben in Stockwell, Israel soldiers who have killed babies and children in the Middle East over the last years. Ben, what don't you understand? The actions of the Israeli military, the Israeli government, the Israeli Prime Minister have nothing to do with British Jews living in Golders Green or Manchester or wherever else it might be. I'm sure you're intelligent enough to see the distinction. As I always say, Donald Trump has some pretty questionable policies, but you wouldn't take that out on any Americans who happen to be living or visiting the United Kingdom, would you? Ben, just think it through. Paul, you're on the next call on this, but we must look at other matters. And I think this would have been front page about for events, of course, in Golders Green. The Bank of England signalling interest rates could rise this year as it attempts to curb inflation. Indeed, the term Trumpflation now being applied. A significant energy price shock from the Iran conflict. Governor of the Bank of England, Andrew Bailey, said yesterday,
the longer the conflict in the Middle East continues, the worse the impact will become. Reopening the Strait of Hormuz and repairing the damage that has been done to the world's energy infrastructure can, however, reduce the impact of this negative supply shock to our economy.
To Simon French, Chief Economist at the investment bank Panmure Liberum, formerly an economist at the Cabinet Office and DWP, Department of Work and Pensions. Rate held at 3.75%, Simon. The right decision? If so, why? And what do you see if you stare into your crystal ball? Morning, Simon.
Morning, Nick.
It was the right decision. This is an energy price shock that the Bank of England's not in control of. It also doesn't know how it will evolve from here. So when I stare into my crystal ball, I have, like the Bank of England, all other economists, got to try and make sense of what events are going on in Washington, in the Gulf, and what that will mean to the price of energy here in the UK, but also the degree to which the Bank of England has to take into account what we call second order effects. Yes, it's going to cost everybody. All listeners this morning are going to find it more expensive to fill up their car, to pay their heating bills from the middle of the year. But it's whether that permeates, like it did in 2022 and 2023, into the other parts of the economy, moves inflation perhaps to 4%, 5%, 6%. And at that point, I think the Bank of England would have to react. We're not there yet. It's not my central case, but that's the risk.
I've known you for a few years. You're a pretty steadfast kind of bloke. Are there any nervousness at all about events in the Strait of Hormuz?
Certainly. I think the Bank of England worries about inflation having quite pernicious effects on other prices around the economy. They think it is manageable. In the words of central banking, they can look through this without having to raise borrowing costs for households, borrowing costs for businesses. But there is nervousness that they are simply not in control of events. And in reality, it's not just central bankers who are not in control of events. I would say large numbers of countries around the world are not in control of events. And this is why Andrew Bailey can talk, and he did talk, I thought, quite credibly yesterday in sending a message to households on what could happen. But let's not pretend that he's in control of events.
Lastly, and I often ask you this question when we conclude our conversations, what will you and others like you in your line of work be looking for over the coming weeks or months?
So it is the degree to which those energy costs that we know are going up. So we've already seen it at the petrol pump. We know on the 1st of July, the energy price cap here in the UK will go up. I'll be looking for signs of other prices going up, you know, in the services sector, other second order prices in manufacturing. If the cost of food starts to go up, if you start to see that happening for a persistent period of time, then my current case, which is the Bank of England doesn't have to act and doesn't have to raise interest rates, I'm afraid that would have to change. We may be talking about multiple rate increases in the second half of this year.
Enjoy your holiday weekend if you get one this weekend. Simon, thanks so much. Simon French is Chief Economist at the investment bank Panmure Liberum. We will come to more of your calls concerning Zach Polansi's intervention, but that leads us neatly into, and it is of course May Day, so we enter a new month, our checker on those petrol prices.
Nick Ferrari's Fuel Tracker on LBC.
And when we started this back in the early days, goodness me, in the early days of March, we were looking in London, and I'll always give you the unleaded first and then the diesel, and I forget the 0.9 at the end because it's irrelevant, really. £1.34 got you a litre of unleaded, £1.42 got you a litre of diesel. Where are we now? Daniel in Golders Green. Daniel, what have we got? Morning.
Good morning, Nick. Well, drivers in London today are paying £1.57 for unleaded and they're paying £1.89 for diesel.
Safe weekend. I say that specifically, noting with part of London you're in. Daniel, thank you. So that's gone from 1.30. It has come down a touch. Last time we spoke with Daniel was the 13th of last month, so it's come down 2p for your unleaded and 3p for your diesel. Interesting. To Scotland, Murdo in Auchtermuchty. Hello, Murdo. What we got?
Good morning, Nick. We have unleaded at 156.9 and diesel 189.9, so it's come down a ticky as well.
It has. Safe weekend to you up there. Just to remind you, when we started this on the 10th of March, unleaded 132, it's now at 156, but 2 weeks ago it was at 162, so touch down there. Diesel started at 145, it's now 189, but when I last spoke with Murdo, it was 197, so again, down a touch. Thanks, gents. Safe driving to you both. 7:27, back to events in Golders Green, and events involving the politician. Paul's in Twickenham. Paul, you're on the radio. Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Nick, I didn't require Zach Polansi to raise concerns about this. I myself, as soon as I saw that video, thought this requires second thoughts and consideration for kicking the head of the man who was on the ground, having been tasered, as if his head was a football, I found shocking. There are two sides to this coin.
Well, they're trying to stop potentially an explosive fest being detonated, Paul.
To me, Nick, there seems to be two sides to the coin. One is police bravery and what we expect them to do in impossibly difficult situations. But the tools they have available, tasers, Parva spray, tasering again.
Paul, those two officers, both their pairs of hands are engaged in trying to restrain the suspect. They've got nothing. If he's about to explode his vest, what do you want them to do? You can't rationalise with the suspect.
Nick, I think the dangers, if we even refuse to contemplate as a country whether this was excessive force, we're in trouble. Consequences, Nick. If we criticise Trump and the way ICE behave, if excessive force is used, we weaken our position. That goes the same for the IDF, for example.
I think you've made a quantum leap there to what we saw on the streets of North London to what we've seen ICE agents do in the United States. Paul, I respect your position. You're not the only one who thinks that. I have to tell you, I think you're wrong. But thank you. I respect you. We'll disagree agreeably and we'll see what others make of it. Thanks, Paul. In a related conversation, do you remember when Home Secretary Shabana Mahmood was with us yesterday and she told me about £7 million being made available to schools to tackle anti-Semitism?
This is a programme that is being led by the Department for Education. They've made £7 million available, and that is being developed as a new tool for schools to use in order to tackle anti-Semitism.
But when was that money made available? How much was spent? Where's it all going? The answer to those questions and more, because we put a bit of work into that after this. 7:30, breakfast with me, Nick Ferrara, here on LBC. News then, Lottie Morley.
A man has been charged with two counts of attempted murder after an attack in North London. The terror threat level has now been raised to severe in the UK after this double stabbing in Golders Green. The Met Commissioner, Sir Mark Rowley, has told Nick, "We are fighting a pandemic of anti-Semitism at the moment." Millions of private renters in England will benefit from new protections which have now come into force. The Renters' Rights Act includes fines for landlords who evict tenants without a reason and the end of fixed-term tenancies. And the King has arrived in Bermuda for a three-day trip after his US state visit. It's his first trip to a British overseas territory as sovereign. LBC weather, a warm start across the UK with lots of sunny spells and a high of 24 degrees.
On the latest episode of The Newsagents.
We've just been told that inflation could rise by 7% the start of next year. The cost of the Iran war is hitting us so hard, but Trump seems to have no plans to see it ended.
Get the latest episode of The Newsagents with Emily Maitlis, John Sopel and Lewis Goodall. Listen or watch on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
Save even more this weekend with bank holiday offers in the Furniture Village sale. We've added new offers on sofas, dining, beds and bedroom furniture. And that's on top of sale prices. Bank holiday offers end Monday at Furniture Village, an award-winning family business.
Join Andre Rieu at OVO Arena, Wembley, London on 18th of September. Book now at andrerieu.com.
Oh, you want weight loss advice?
Weight loss? Actually, what you want to do...
I got my weight loss secret from my mother, who got it from her mother's...
My tip is...
Weight loss?
Forget that.
Dragon fruit.
Podcast.
Advice.
Or you could go to MedExpress. MedExpress. Healthcare without the noise. Go to medexpress.co.uk/weightloss.
Ali 60 milligram hard capsules contain orlistat for overweight adults with a BMI of 28 plus. Follow a reduced calorie, low fat diet. Always read the label.
There's one green bottle sat on my fridge shelf. This green and white bottle that supports my gut health. Beautiful by nature, beautiful by name. It's the tastiest way to up my gut health game.
Beautiful gut health. Switch your yogurt to the UK's number one kefir and give your gut and your summer a lift. Kefir is a source of calcium which contributes to the normal function of digestive enzymes. For verification of UK's number one kefir, see biotifulguthealth.com/radio.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
7:33, plenty of calls coming in on Zach Polanski's involvement in the incidents up in Golders Green in North London. But let's get into the world of finance and business as we always do around this time. Christian May, Editor-in-Chief at City AM. And let's go to a big brewer, Whitbread. What are they saying? Christian, good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Yeah, all change on the horizon at Premier Inn owner Whitbread, which has announced plans to shed just under 4,000 jobs. Now, among other things, it blamed Rachel Reeves' tax raids for driving up its costs. You have to remember, of course, there have been big hikes to the cost of employment, to say nothing of changes to the law around employment rights, but also, of course, business rates, the big bugbear for hotels. The hotel giants unveiled its new five-year strategy. It needs to save about 250 million quid. It's going to do that by taking a long, hard look at about 197 restaurants that sit within its hotels. It's planning to sell off about 110 of them over the next 2 years, and the rest are going to be converted into hotel rooms, squeezing a bit more money out of the accommodation side of the business. The hotel industry has been lobbying the government intensively for some business rates relief along the lines of the emergency package that was thrown to the pub sector. The government says they're looking at it, but we haven't heard much from them on that yet. So changes afoot at Whitbread.
Am I going to have to spend more money for my Hellman's mayonnaise?
I thought you made your own mayonnaise. You always got the look of a man who makes his own mayonnaise.
Oh, indeed, yeah. And my own pasta, that's right.
Yeah, get up early. Unilever, the conglomerate giant behind, as you said, Hellman's mayonnaise, Dove soap and a range of other products, has said that the war in Iran and the inflationary impact will see to it that prices are going to go up. Now, we know this is happening, of course. We heard in detail from the Bank of England yesterday about their worst case and best case and fingers crossed cases for inflation. But under any of them, it's going up over the months ahead. And these price rises are one of the reasons behind that. The FTSE 100 consumer goods giant says that cost inflation will cost them between 750 and 900 million euros. And most of that impact will be felt in the home care division. So maybe your mayonnaise is safe because it's going to be things like Domestos and all the other sort of cleaning brands that are going to feel the pinch. And they've got to contend with very high energy costs. And you can imagine what they are for a large manufacturer.
As the would-seemly extraordinarily talented Tim Cook decides to leave Apple, how's the business doing?
In rude health, by the looks of things. They announced last night demand for the new iPhone has reached record heights. Sales growth in China particularly strong. Overall, sales of Apple products grew 17% to $111 billion in the first 3 months of this year. That is substantially up on the same quarter a year ago. Sales in China up by just under 30%. And the outgoing chief exec, as you say, Tim Cook, said that demand for the new iPhone has been extraordinary. Demand for other products like the watches, etc., a little bit flatter. They also talked a bit about their AI strategy. Now, they have a strategy which is, rather than all the other tech giants who are going all in on trying to build their own AI foundations, Apple is more interested in integrating other people's AI into their products. And they said yesterday that they put privacy at the heart of all of their applications, which has always been Apple's one of Apple's biggest selling points.
And before I let you go, I remember we talked some time ago about a financial literacy campaign that you and your colleagues are running at City AM. Firstly, remind the listeners what it is. Secondly, how are we doing?
That's right. City AM has teamed up with a charity in the square mile called City Pay It Forward. And between us, we launched a campaign a few months back to start raising money to fund grants for primary schools in London for year six students. We wanted to be able to give £1,000, which is what we think it will cost, to enable teachers to properly teach several sessions on financial literacy, everything from saving and money matters through to entrepreneurship, to year six students. And with the support of some major city institutions, the likes of Schroders and Barings and Aviva and Fidelity, along with a lot of individual donations, we have raised so far about £175,000. That is going to provide that financial education to 175 primary schools in the capital. This is an ongoing effort, though, so if anybody's listening and wants to get involved, do please get in touch, because we want to roll this out to as many schools as possible.
On your website, or pick up a copy of City AM, I imagine, lastly, Christian.
That's right, yeah. You can look for what's called the Year 6 Dividend Campaign.
Christian May, Editor-in-Chief at City AM, good luck with that and all your colleagues working on that, and have yourself a good holiday weekend if you are getting one. 7:38 is the time. Let's come back to those events in North London, and the events particularly pertaining to the police activity in stopping the alleged attacker. Alan's in Finchley. Alan, what are you going to say? Good morning.
Good morning. Zach Polanski, why do we listen to him? Why do we give him so much publicity?
Because his party's doing well in the polls, Alan.
Yeah, but that's because he should be in charge of the NHS or the women who want to vote for him, you know, for free breast implants. His own mother and his own family, I believe, have disowned him.
I don't know if that's true. We need to triple-check that. I don't think they've disowned him, Alan, have they? Where do you get that from? Well, I'll tell you, what's safer is that we talk about the police activity, again, with the alleged perpetrator. Did they go too far, Alan?
Absolutely not. I mean, it's like, what was it, the majority, 99% of your callers, if it's another country, you would... Oh, OK, we're not in another country, but you would have been shot. Yeah. He's a big lump.
Well, no, OK, again, right, the suspect. You're in Finchley. I'm not going to ask your faith because you don't have to tell me, but you are very close to where some of these events are taking place. How safe do you feel, Alan?
Well, I'll tell you another one, which is not on the news yet. Last night, outside my home in West Finchley, by West Finchley Station, outside a school, when I came home about 10 o'clock, there were 15 police cars, vans and ambulance. There was a stabbing last night, again, about 9 o'clock at night.
Really? Right, we better find out about that. Alan, just talk to one of my colleagues now. Just give us the exact road. I don't want to give the road because I don't want to identify you. And we need to make sure that that's absolutely bolted on. But, Alan, thank you for your input on that. Let's check the conversation we had earlier. Yep, OK. John's in Enfield. John, your view of that scene of the arrest of the man who's been charged?
Yeah, when I saw that on TV, Nick, it wasn't just the police. I think I saw a member of the public kicking the guy in the head. And as they were trying to disarm the guy, they were actually telling him to let go of the knife, which he refused to do. So the moment I saw that, I said, right, I can see tomorrow now the so-called woke mob are going to come in and put up a fight for this poor guy to stab people. But I feel that the people involved, the brave police that have not been given arms, not that I think that they should be given arms, you know, their job is a lot harder. I think they should be awarded medals for what they did.
Well, see, there are police bravery awards. I used to host them until a few years ago. It was my privilege to host. I think I did about 12 on the run. For about four different commissioners, as it goes. Let's see that they do. There's also, of course, something, the hugely influential Pride of Britain Awards run by the Daily Mirror and ITV. And that's just the other side. It's about 4 or 5 months away. John, thank you for that. Let's go to a related conversation. And on yesterday's show, almost around this time, actually, I was speaking with the Home Secretary, Shabana Mahmood, and she told me, as we were talking about the Prime Minister says we needed to tackle the root of anti-Semitism, which obviously speaks to education. The Home Secretary telling me there was £7 million worth of funding to tackle anti-Semitism in schools.
The government has already funded more money for education so that we can tackle this hatred at
root. What sort of education?
Target that at children specifically through our schools so that we can start to clamp down on what is becoming a more permissive environment
for anti-Semitism. But what additional classes are held? To tell me how that works. What is on the syllabus that wasn't there before?
Well, this is a programme that is being led by the Department for Education. They've made £7 million available and that is being developed as a new tool for schools to use in order to tackle anti-Semitism.
So the team put in a bit of work afterwards to find out. In fact, the £7 million was pledged by Jeremy Hunt as Conservative Chancellor in 2023. Only £500,000 spent under the Conservatives. Subsequently, £2.3 million has been provided to Palace Yard to run a scholarship programme there. And £1 million has been invested in 26 to 27 as part of an innovation fund. But when you think of £1 million, which, yes, very kind if anybody wants to send it to me, legitimately, that is, to educate every child in the country, it's not going to go very far, is it? Karen Pollock is Chief Executive of the Holocaust Educational Trust. We did speak yesterday, but it's so key to the work that you and your colleagues are trying to do. Have you heard of much impact of this fund, money set aside by the previous government, not spent and not really being tackled by the current government either? Karen, good morning again.
Good morning, Nick. Well, I think there are a few things to consider. The first is that let's talk about I run the Holocaust Educational Trust. So the Holocaust is on the national curriculum. It is taught, I can't say it's taught in every school, but it is taught in most schools and most teachers are equipped to teach about the history of the Holocaust. The challenge we have, and we have always had, is first of all, teachers have a very overloaded curriculum and limited time. And then it's also about how much interest and space they want to give just to this subject, Holocaust education, in the classroom. So some will spend a lesson or two and some will do weeks of lessons. So it really will depend school to school. But I'd like to say, on the whole, good work is happening in our classrooms.
That's
but
good
the challenge.
Hear.
But the challenge of Holocaust education is obviously we're teaching the history of the Holocaust. It's taught in the history as part of history in the national curriculum. And yes, we talk about what were the events preceding the Holocaust? The actual, you know, it didn't happen. The gas chambers didn't happen overnight. The nature of anti-Semitism beforehand. The question of bystanders. How this could become what it did become. And of course we say at the end of the Holocaust, anti-Semitism didn't vanish. I mean, people were denying it soon after the camps were liberated. But what is missing, and I think it's fair to say, is that there isn't necessarily an area on the curriculum in schools for anti-Semitism to be taught specifically in its own right, and certainly the contemporary guises that it sort of manifests itself today. And can I just say, so a few things I would say.
Briefly, if you can, Karen. Yep.
Sorry, Nick. Yeah. The first is that I think it should be a rite of passage in the same way that a young person leaves school and knows what racism is and homophobia is and all forms of prejudice, they should understand what anti-Semitism is. And so what it needs is a holistic approach in a school for it to be taught possibly in various different curricula, in different subject matters, with teachers feeling confident to teach about what is a difficult subject. So there's work to do. So there are funds available, and some work is going on.
I must leave it there, Karen. Thank you. Karen Pollock, your Chief Executive of the Holocaust Educational Trust. It's good to hear that money is getting through. I would argue if we're going to educate our way out of it, £1 million is not going to be enough, but we'll take calls on that. Thank you, Karen. Coming up later in the show, the Tony Blair Institute says it's time to do away with the triple lock. Hugely controversial. Something I put to the Conservative Party leader, Kemi Badenoch, earlier this week.
So we are saying that the triple lock is not where the problem is. The problem is people who can work, who don't work, and we need to get them off welfare and into work.
That's later in the show. 7:45 LBC News headlines. Lottie Morley.
A man has been charged with two counts of attempted murder after an attack in North London. Millions of private renters in England will benefit from new protections which have now come into force. And the King has arrived in Bermuda for a three-day trip after his US state visit. LBC weather, a warm start across the UK with lots of sunshine, a high of 24 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. There are queues of about 6 miles on the M25 clockwise between junctions 10 at the A3 and 11 at Chertsey. It's because of an accident. One lane is now closed, but it's still very slow. And then anti-clockwise, even though all the lanes are open on that side, it's slow because of onlookers from junction 13 at Staines. Very busy on the M25 as well, clockwise from junction 30 at the A13 over the QE2 bridge to junction 1A at the A206 because a car's broken down. In Surrey, the M3 north bound, one lane's closed just before the M25. That's because a car's broken down. And also on the M4 westbound at junction 5 at Langley, a car's broken down, so one lane is closed for recovery.
This is LBC.
At Tesco, we know that right now every little helps. That's why we've made Aldi Price Match available in over 2,000 Tesco Express stores. Price matching on essentials so you can bag the basics with confidence. When every penny counts, just look out for the Aldi Price Match logo next time you nip into your local Express. Tesco, every little helps. Prices checked and matched in Aldi stores and online twice weekly. Pro rata excludes promotions. Selected products excludes Northern Ireland and Woosh. See tesco.com/Aldi Price Match.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060973. LBC. Get that Euro Millions feeling with Friday's £34 million jackpot. Plus, 10 UK winners are guaranteed to be millionaires. That's 10 more reasons to dance. 10 more robots, 10 more limbos, 10 more salsas. Friday's Euro Millions jackpot is £34 million. And 10 UK winners are guaranteed to be millionaires. Euro Millions from the National Lottery. It could be you. Estimated jackpot. Rules apply. 18 plus.
Shine Night Walk London is a 10K, half marathon or full marathon supported walk around the city at night on the 19th of September to raise vital money for Cancer Research UK. It's also
everyone walking with all their colours, twinkling away.
We can actually see how nice London is. And London is different at night time.
Celebration of life, and it gives hope.
Step towards a brighter future at shinewalk.org today to get 30% off your entry. Together, we are beating cancer. T's and C's apply.
Three, two, sun.
EasyJet's Big Orange Sale is now on, with up to £400 off package holidays and up to 20% off flights. Book now at EasyJet.com. Get out there. Selected dates and flights. Sale ends 5th of May. Holidays minimum spend and after protected. T's and C's apply.
Calling all young creatives. It's time to get prepped for the media business. And where better than Global Academy? Here's Atina, a media business student in year 12.
Being a young creative at Global Academy means that I get to turn my passion into a career. From studying creative enterprise, I've already learnt how to market my own business and gain knowledge about the business side of the industry.
Global Academy. Apply now and join us in years 10 or 12. GlobalAcademy.com.
Ready for a new kitchen? Find the one at Wix. With kitchens for first homes and forever homes too. Visit Wix today.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
7:49, we heard from the Commissioner of the Met for a police update on events in North London. Let's get a political update now from Labour MP, Minister for Victims and Violence Against Women and Girls, Alex Davis-Jones, who joins me. Just before we start our conversation, Minister, I just want to remind my listeners a little of what the Prime Minister said from Downing Street last night.
Take the marches that happen regularly across Britain. Of course we protect freedom of speech and peaceful protest in this country. But if you are marching with people wearing pictures of paragliders without calling it out, you are venerating the murder of Jews. If you stand alongside people who say globalise the Intifada, you are calling for terrorism against Jews. And people who use that phrase should be prosecuted. It is racism. Extreme racism.
The Prime Minister last night, Alex Davis-Jones, joins me now. Minister, why has it taken 2.5 years for the penny to drop for the Prime Minister? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. The situation in our country is intolerable.
No, I know that, but why has it taken 2.5 years for us to talk about globalise the Intifada, venerating the murder of Jews? 2.5 years these demos have been going on.
We have taken action on the marches, whether that be working with the policing partners to ensure that anyone carrying out this type of behaviour is dealt with. We have banned marches where necessary as well, where they're causing intimidation. And we have just this week passed legislation, Nick, to ensure that we have the powers now under the Crime and Policing Act to prevent these repeated, persistent marches occurring near schools or synagogues or places of worship where they are causing this distress and alarm, because that is unacceptable. But the government hasn't waited 2.5 years. We have been acting.
I did,
and he was right.
He said that there's been venerating the murder of Jews, globalised the Intifada. It's been going on for months.
It has, and we have taken action. But that's been
passing
this legislation.
So that won't happen again. What will happen? You're probably aware the next demo is planned for a fortnight tomorrow. If that is allowed to proceed, and we hear globalise the Intifada, or there may be those photographs of paragliders, people with pictures of paragliders, hang gliders, what action will be taken?
I would expect there to be arrests, and I would expect there to be prosecutions, as the Prime Minister has said, because that behaviour is unacceptable. And anyone seeking to divide, cause racial hatred in our country, anti-Semitic or otherwise, should be dealt with by the full force of the law.
But if we look at the horrific events in Manchester, where two worshippers lost their lives, and then this pattern of attacks in North London, and you'll be aware there's been a charge regarding the most recent, so we have to go carefully. The government does stand accused of not doing enough. It's words, 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 as many Jewish community leaders are saying, isn't it, Minister?
And I hear those, that feeling, that grief, that anger from the Jewish community. As you know, I was in Heaton Park Synagogue following the horrific attack there. Thankfully, many Jewish friends who I've reached out to over the past few days who, again, have told me that they are sick of platitudes. They need action. And yes, responses such as investing more money in policing and security are a solution, are a response, but they're not the solution. What we need is to tackle and root out anti-Semitism from our country, wherever it's occurring, whether that be in our NHS, in our schools, in our university, online. And that is what the government
is
determined
to do.
What about
the BBC?
Everywhere, Nick.
Well, you didn't. Nothing was done. They broadcast live a musical act saying death, death to the IDF. No action was taken. That's the state broadcaster.
So what we need to do is ensure that wherever this is occurring...
You keep saying what we need to do. I know it's not you personally, but how many more times are we going to hear, we stand in sympathy with our Jewish friends, an attack on one is attack on us all, we are going to take action. No action is taken. The BBC didn't even get a review over that.
Well, I've talked about the action that we're taking, whether that be fast-tracking legislation, whether that be ensuring that the recommendations from the reviews that are being carried out across the NHS, education, are being implemented when they come forward, that we are ensuring that the Online Safety Act is fit for purpose and Ofcom are taking action where this hatred and proliferation is occurring online, for example. So action is being taken here, Nick, but ultimately this is about all of us taking responsibility for our behaviour and ensuring that we are preventing any anti-Semitism or racial hatred wherever it's occurring.
How confident are you that the Prime Minister is in touch with the mood and sentiments in parts of North London at the moment?
Very confident, Nick.
Why do they chant Keir Starmer, Jew, Harmer, then, Minister?
Because they are a community in anger, in grief, in trauma, and I totally understand that response. And the Prime Minister does too. This is a community that is being threatened, that is under attack, and they need all of, not just our sympathy and our love and support here. As I've said, Nick, they need that action. They need a solution to the problems that are occurring on the streets in Britain, because an attack on the Jewish community is an attack on all of us. It is an attack on our values.
These are words we've heard so many times, Minister.
They are words, but they are being backed up by action, Nick.
Attack on one is attack on us all. There we go again. Every time we hear that from ministers and prime ministers.
And it's true, and words matter. Words matter, Nick. Leadership matters, and action matters too. And I've talked about the action that we're taking here. I don't want to sit here and give you more platitudes, because the Jewish community deserve better than that. They deserve our action, and they're getting that.
So if the extra £25 million was made available by your colleague Shabana Mahmood yesterday, clearly it should have been made available before that, shouldn't it?
We did put more funding in, and clearly more is needed. The additional £25 million is going in to directly support policing in Jewish communities near schools and synagogues to keep the community safe, because that is the bare minimum that they need right now. But they also need a solution, not just an immediate response, as I've stated, to ensure that we root out anti-Semitism from our country, that we stop this culture and this proliferation of hatred and division that is being sown across the country. And that is the action the government are taking.
Around 50 minutes ago, we had the Commissioner of the Metropolitan Police, Sir Mark Rowley, on, and he was stinging in his condemnation of the messages put out by Zach Polanski, the Green Party leader, yesterday. I can remind you of what he said, if you need to. You're probably aware of it. Your view of what Mr. Polanski has been saying, Minister.
I am, and I was deeply alarmed by the comments of Zach Polanski and others yesterday and in the past few days regarding the attacks. Those brave officers of the Met Police ran towards danger. They seek to serve our communities, and they deserve all of our support in an incredibly difficult job, and anyone seeking to undermine that is wrong, quite frankly, and I support Sir Mark in his efforts to try to prevent this division wherever it's occurring, even in political parties, as we've seen.
You talk about the word prevent. The demo that's planned for 2 weeks today, will that be prevented? What will happen there? Jonathan Hall, someone you probably know or certainly know of, is suggesting there should be a temporary pause on such demonstrations. Minister.
So the marches are under review, Nick, and we do have the new legislation and the new powers to act where necessary.
What does under review mean?
So we are examining any intelligence and threats that are that could become apparent. We're working with our policing partners. The Home Secretary has taken a very firm stance here. But I would just encourage anyone seeking to attend a march at the moment to maybe just pause and think twice. Think about your actions. Think about what certain communities and individuals and how they're feeling right now. They need all of us. As I said, this is a responsibility on all of us to do better, to be better citizens, to think about how their behaviour and their actions are being perceived at a time when there is a community in fear, and quite rightly so, and it is on all of us to do better. And anyone has the right to protest in our country when they do it safely and peacefully. That is a fundamental right that I will defend to the hilt. But if you are seeking to go out there and stand with others who are calling to globalise the Intifada, who are calling for death to Jews, then that is wrong, that is illegal, and the government and the police will take action.
We're now at the second highest level of awareness at severe regarding a potential terror attack. There's only one higher, critical. The move from substantial to severe, has that been informed solely by events in North London?
No, but they have contributed. So it's not solely as a result of what happened in Golders Green this week, but it has contributed significantly to the independent operational decision to increase the threat level. And I want to reassure listeners that this is about being alert but not alarmed. This is operational. This is to ensure that we have the adequate resourcing we need to keep the country safe, not just certain communities. This is about all of us. And it is on all of us, again, to remain vigilant and to report any suspicious or unusual activity to the police.
Lastly, you talk about taking direct action. You could prescribe or ban the IRGC in line with Australia, Canada, the European Union and other countries. Why has that not happened?
The Prime Minister has been unequivocal that we will take action to ban groups like the IRGC.
When?
We need to fast track. So we need legislation to do this,
Why?
Nick.
You are the lawmakers. Just make it happen.
So, and that is our intention. We will be fast tracking legislation to bring forward a bill to ensure that we can prescribe groups like the IRGC. That is the intention of this government, and the Prime Minister has been clear that he intends to do so.
Well, you know my question is going to be when, obviously. When is it going to happen?
As soon as possible.
What does that
Well, you know, we have the King's Speech in the coming weeks.
We're going to see it there?
We may indeed. I'm not going to preempt what will be in there, but we have been clear that we need legislation to prescribe groups like the IRGC. We will be fast-tracking that legislation, and we will be doing so as soon as possible.
And you don't feel we're desperately behind other nations here?
I think we've needed to work with other nations to see what is appropriate, because this is a global response required to certain threats everywhere. We saw the horrific attack in Australia, for example. We've seen attacks around the world happening. This is about ensuring that we are joined up, that we have all of the necessary information, and that we are taking the action needed when appropriate and when it is responsible to do so.
Grateful for your time. Minister for Victims and Violence Against Women and Girls, thank you. Alex Davis-Jones joining us here on LBC, taking us to just before 8 o'clock for the latest news headlines.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 8 o'clock, a 45-year-old man has been charged with attempted murder after two Jewish men were stabbed in Golders Green. British national Essa Suleiman is due in court in Westminster later. Yesterday, the UK's terror threat level was raised from substantial to severe for the first time in more than 4 years. Metropolitan Police Commissioner Sir Mark Rowley has told Nick he thinks there should be permanent teams based in Jewish communities.
I need the resources and the capability to protect Londoners. And on Wednesday night, after the awful attack, we put a proposal into the government how we can make the temporary extra resources we're putting into North West London and around Jewish communities permanent, because dragging resources across London isn't the best solution long term, isn't sustainable, but a permanent local team supported by experts in firearms in those areas could make a real sustained difference for those communities.
The Prime Minister is under pressure to ban pro-Palestine marches in the aftermath of the attack. Government Minister Alex Davis-Jones has told Nick they are under review.
So we are examining any intelligence and threats that are that could become apparent. We're working with our policing partners. The Home Secretary has taken a very firm stance here. But I would just encourage anyone seeking to attend a march at the moment to maybe just pause and think twice. Think about your actions. Think about what certain communities and individuals and how they're feeling right now. They need all of us. As I said, this is a responsibility on all of us to do better, to be better citizens.
Millions of people renting their homes in England will be better protected from today as the new Renters' Rights Act comes in. Critics claim it will lead to a rise in rental prices and a lack of available properties. But Tara Hawthorne is a solicitor and told LBC the new rules will make things fairer.
We are looking at it from a positive aspect in that tenants are now going to have more certainty with the properties. The discrimination rules are being increased massively. Tenants can have pets. So for tenants, it's actually giving them more certainty.
King Charles has arrived in Bermuda after his four-day state visit to the US. It's his first visit to a British overseas territory since he became monarch. The king will spend 3 days on the island, focusing on conservation and biodiversity projects. And parts of the UK could be hotter than Hawaii later. The Met Office says it will be warmest in the east and southeast of England. Forecasters say more changeable weather is on the way for the bank holiday weekend, though. In the city, the FTSE 100 will reopen at 10,361 after closing up 148 points yesterday. The pound buys $1.35 and a euro 15. LBC weather, a warm start across the UK with lots of sunshine. A few showers moving eastwards later, a high of 24 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Lottie Morley.
It's the cinematic event of the year. Critics are saying a stunning, breathtaking triumph of savings. It's 2-for-1 cinema tickets from Compare the Market in cinemas all year.
That sounds like a great movie.
Sergey, it's no movie. It's 2-for-1 offer on cinema tickets.
Oh, yeah. I knew that.
Get 2-for-1 cinema tickets every Tuesday or Wednesday with the Compare the Market app. The simplest way to save.
When you take out a qualifying product to Compare the Market, one membership per year participating cinemas, two standard tickets only, cheap as free. T's and C's apply.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Good morning, 3 minutes after 8, Friday the 1st of March. Time to put a pause on those marches, termed by some, of course, some politicians as hate marches, with the temperature and the mood at the moment. We'll look at that in more detail. In other stories, other news, the story you just heard on the LBC News Bulletin, a revolution in the world of rentals. Housing Secretary Steve Reid speaking about the May Day legislation.
They will ban unfair, so-called no-fault evictions, where landlords kick people out just so that they can put the rent up for new tenants.
And as the Tony Blair Institute says it's time to do away with the triple lock, where do politicians stand? A question I put 2 days ago to Conservative leader Kemi Badenoch.
So we are saying that the triple lock is not where the problem is. The problem is people who can work, who don't work, and we need to get them off welfare and into work.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
If you're holding to talk about Zach Polensky's rather ignorant intervention, don't worry, we'll find room for that as well. But let's move to the idea of this march. And I'm going to play you what's called a clip or a piece of audio, I think possibly for the third time, because during his Downing Street statement last night, the Prime Minister, Sir Keir Starmer, hinted at a possible ban or action to be taken on these pro-Palestine marches that have been taking place across streets in the United Kingdom over the last few years.
Take the marches that happen regularly across Britain. Of course we protect freedom of speech and peaceful protest in this country. But if you are marching with people wearing pictures of paragliders without calling it out, you are venerating the murder of Jews. If you stand alongside people who say globalise the Intifada, you are calling for terrorism against Jews. And people who use that phrase should be prosecuted. It is racism. Extreme racism.
Now, exactly an hour ago, I was speaking with the Commissioner of the Met, Sir Mark Rowley. I asked for his view on whether those marches, one scheduled for a fortnight tomorrow, should proceed.
There's some big marches planned for 2 weeks tomorrow, the 16th. I'm concerned about the scale of those in this context, and we're looking hard at sort of what conditions and powers we should use in respect of those events. As I think you know, Nick, protests can't be banned. Parliament has made it clear they can't be. What we can do, we can restrict how a march takes place, and in the most extreme circumstances, and it's a very high bar, we can restrict it to a static event alone, and we're looking at all possibilities and what's appropriate in this circumstance.
I mean, there are some voices, Commissioner, who would go further, and there should be a temporary, I repeat that word, a temporary pause on these sort of demonstrations to take some of the heat out of the situation. Surely that's something that should be considered.
That's a matter for Parliament. That's not within the law. I have no power to do that. If Parliament wanted to do that, then of course we would sort of execute on the decision they made.
With the Commissioner of the Met referencing Parliament, it was appropriate then to bring into the conversation the Government Minister this morning, Alex Davis-Jones, Minister for Violence Against Women and Girls. And what currently is the political position?
The marches are under review, Nick, and we do have the new legislation and the new powers to act where necessary.
What does under review mean?
So we are examining any intelligence and threats that are that could become apparent. We're working with our policing partners. The Home Secretary has taken a very firm stance here. But I would just encourage anyone seeking to attend a march at the moment to maybe just pause and think twice. Think about your actions. Think about what certain communities and individuals and how they're feeling right now. They need all of us. As I said, this is a responsibility on all of us to do better, to be better citizens, to think about how their behaviour and their actions are being perceived at a time when there is a community in fear, and quite rightly so, and it is on all of us to do better. And anyone has the right to protest in our country when they do it safely and peacefully. That is a fundamental right that I will defend to the hilt. But if you are seeking to go out there and stand with others who are calling to globalise the Intifada, who are calling for death to Jews, then that is wrong, that is illegal, and the government and the police will take action.
Let's bring into the conversation Jonathan Hall, KC, who's the UK's independent reviewer of terrorism legislation and state threat legislation. We'll talk marches in a moment, if we may, sir. But first off, as you will be aware, the level now moved to the one from the highest level of critical. We've moved from substantial to severe. The right timing, the right action, so to do. Good morning to you.
Good morning. I mean, all I know is that JTAC is highly independent. This is not a government decision at all. And my example for that is when you have the 25th year anniversary of the Good Friday Agreement, Joe Biden, the then president, flying into Northern Ireland, JTAC put the threat level up. It was the last time that any politician would want to do it. So it's a genuinely robust, independent system. And so what I mean is, if they've done it, they've got a good reason for doing it.
You have concerns about these marches, Jonathan Hall.
Yeah, I do. Well, as you know, I'm worried about public demonisation of Jews, Israelis and Zionists, how it paints a target on the back of Jews. And some people seeing that ever normalised language in the public domain will then say, well, I've got to do something about it. And we'll see someone, whether they're an Islamic State supporter or someone with poor mental health, going out and carrying out an attack. So I've been worried about this for some time. And that's why I think that there should be a moratorium on the marches. As Sir Mark Rowley, the Commissioner of the Police, rightly said, he doesn't have the power to ban a static protest, but I don't see why the marches should continue, bearing in mind the emergency that exists at the moment and my fear, which continues, that the more you normalise anti-Semitism in the public domain, the more Jews are going to be at risk.
So to clarify, you would support a static protest?
But there's no way of stopping it. I wouldn't support a static protest, but there's no way of stopping it, which is why Sir Mark Rowley said, ultimately, it's down to Parliament if they want to stop a static protest. But, you know, just listening to those clips now, I think that both the Prime Minister, if I may say so, and the policing minister made some good points. The really interesting point, I think, that was made is, how do people have the conscience to stand alongside someone who is displaying something that is deeply anti-Semitic? And I suppose what I'm getting at is, it's not as if these marches have proven over time to be self-policing. It's just as if there's something in them that means that either people are willing to do it or they're willing to tolerate these profoundly anti-Semitic sentiments. So, you know, it should only be a pause, but there's got to be a way, hasn't there, of working out how the freedom of expression, the right to criticise Israel and its actions, if you want, how that can be done without making it so personal, frankly, against real living people. And I mean, I think I find it staggering that the phrase, which we recognise from the sort of streets of Tehran under the current regime, death too, how that language has come into our public domain now, onto the streets of Britain. I never remember hearing it. It's now a normalised thing. And in fact, the person who initially said it has got various sort of appearances off the back of it. So there's a normalisation here, which I think needs to be cut off.
I challenged the Minister this morning and I challenged the Home Secretary yesterday. The time it seems to take to prescribe or to ban the IRGC. How concerned are you over that?
Well, all I can say is I'm pleased that I recommended it, as you know, a year ago. They're now saying they're going to bring in legislation at pace. So we'll see.
Finally, noting a charge has been brought, what confidence can my listeners have in the Prevent programme?
I think there's two parts to that question, and it's not satisfying. The first part is, to some extent, they can have confidence that it's got quite a strong radar. I mean, they did pick up this bloke in the same way as they did pick up Rudy Cabana. So there's something that works about the nature of Prevent in identifying these people. So that's the positive. But, of course, it's no consolation to the people who then get attacked. I think here, I would just add into the sort of the debate the concept of long-term offender management. Rudy Cabana had offended, this individual had offended. How do you manage people who have proven to be violent, but then, for whatever reason, dip below the threshold where police can't have sort of constant surveillance on them? So there's some good bits, but the long-term offender management is the problem.
Jonathan, as ever, thanks for your time. Jonathan Hall is a KC, UK's independent review of terrorism legislation and state threat legislation. Let's bring into conversation Neil Basu. Neil is a former assistant commissioner with the Metropolitan Police, national lead for counter-terrorism policing as recently as 2021, now co-hosts the global podcast, The Crime Agents. Neil, same question to you, and I don't need to remind you that we now have charges that have been brought. Can my listeners have confidence in the Prevent programme?
Good morning, Nick. I've been a long-standing supporter of Prevent, and I think many people have traduced it over the years. And when Prevent goes wrong, you're going to see it as a catastrophic failure. There's no other way of looking at it. But the reality is that thousands of people are referred into Prevent and hundreds of people are helped by it. When those individual cases go wrong, we can't trash the entire system because of those individual cases. We have to improve it and strengthen it.
On to other events. The march, the concern over the march, should it be static? Should it be a march? Where are you on that, Neil?
Well, I was Barnet Borough Commander for 4 years, so I have a lot of friends in that part of the world. We have some very close Jewish family friends, a couple of which have asked me to remind the public that at least 12 Jewish community groups are asking for a march against anti-Semitism on the 10th of March, and they'd like a million Britons to join them and support them.
10th of March, did you say? No.
Yes, and to denounce anti-Semitism.
10th of May, surely, Neil.
10th of May, sorry.
Yeah, 10th of May.
My apologies.
No, that's right, just to clarify that. Yeah, on you go.
So we need to be really careful in a liberal democracy if we're going to start talking about banning or even temporary pauses on something that we hold dear in liberal democracy, which is freedom of expression and association. There is some very good reasons for calling for that. I understand that, particularly the Jewish community living in fear as they are at the moment. But unless a police officer like Sir Mark Rowley thinks that he cannot police such a demonstration and that there is inevitably going to be serious violence and disorder, he can't even approach the Home Secretary to ask them to ban it. He's right to say at the end of the day it's a political decision if you want to legislate and give police officers even more powers. We're on the Crime and Policing Bill at the moment has the fourth introduction of more protest powers. I have great confidence in the Metropolitan Police to be able to police lawful, peaceful demonstrations and to be able to separate out the kind of criminal behaviour that Keir Starmer pointed out in his speech. That's what should happen. We should be taking very firm action. I've heard Sir Mark Rowley and indeed the Chief Constable of Manchester both jointly saying they would take much firmer action in the future, not just some few months ago.
Lastly, I was unaware that you were Borough Commander in Barnet, so you will, I'm sure, have many friends up there. I'm hearing from my listeners up there that it's just too many words, words, words from Prime Ministers, Ministers and other politicians. I'm sure that sentiment's probably been expressed to you as well. How is that opinion to be changed? How is there more direct action to come, Neil?
Yeah, well, I worked for 30 years with lots of fine words from politicians and not a lot of action. So I listened to Sir Mark this morning, you know, a man in charge of one of the, you know, Europe's biggest police force, which is shrinking and still trying to do everything we ask of him. Incredibly difficult. At least it appears that the government are going to give a sum of money which might allow him to do what he wants to do, which is to greatly strengthen the policing of the North West London Jewish community, both with visible policing and armed policing. And of course, I'm sure some of that will go towards the brilliant Community Security Trust. And long may the police and the Community Security Trust and now Shomrim, long may they work together closely and visibly to the community that needs their protection.
Neil Basu, thank you. Your former Assistant Commissioner at the Met, National Lead for Counterterrorism Policing until 2021. You co-host the global podcast, The Crime Agents. To march, to have a static demonstration, we'll take your views, and we will come back. I promise you, so many want to have their words, their views said, heard on Zach Polanski's Ignorant Intervention. And also, it's a right old shake-up in renters' rights. Ben Toomey is from the campaign group Generation Rent.
What it does mean is that as a renter, you have so much more security and stability in your own home. You can't be evicted for no reason, and you don't get kicked out anymore with just 2 months' notice.
But landlords seeing it rather differently, and we'll look at that later in the hour. 8:16, LBC News headlines then. Lottie Morley.
A 45-year-old man has been charged with attempted murder after two Jewish men were stabbed in Golders Green. Millions of people renting their homes across England will be better protected from today as the new Renters' Rights Act comes in. And King Charles has arrived in Bermuda after his four-day state visit to the US. LBC weather, a warm start across the UK with lots of sunshine, a few showers in the east, a high of 24 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Still very slow on the M25, both ways towards Junction 11 at Chertsey, especially clockwise where it's slow from Junction 9 at Leatherhead. But anti-clockwise is still very busy back from Junction 13 at Staines. Now also on the M25, there are clockwise queues from Junction 29 at the A127 to 30 at the A13, and that was after a car broke down earlier. Problems in Barking, Longbridge Road is blocked eastbound at Fanshawe Avenue. It's because of an ongoing investigation. In Camden, Chalk Farm Road is blocked south
southbound, and that's because a bus has broken down. On the underground, no service for the Piccadilly line between Honest Grove and Hyde Park Corner. Severe delays on the rest of the line and minor delays on the District line.
This is LBC.
At Tesco, we know that right now, every little helps. That's why we've made Aldi Price Match available in over 2,000 Tesco Express stores. Price matching on essentials, so you can bag the basics with confidence. When every penny counts, just look out for the Aldi Price Match logo next time you nip into your local Express. Tesco, every little helps. Prices checked and matched in Aldi stores and online twice weekly. Pro rata excludes promotions. Selected products excludes Northern Ireland and Woosh. See tesco.com/Aldi Price Match.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060973. This is LBC.
There's one green bottle sat on my fridge shelf. This green and white bottle that supports my gut health. Beautiful by nature and beautiful by name. It's the tastiest way to up my gut health game.
Beautiful gut health. Switch your yogurt to the UK's number one kefir and give your gut and your summer a lift. Kefir is a source of calcium which contributes to the normal function of digestive enzymes. For verification of UK's number one kefir, see beautifulguthealth.com/radio.
Go all Irish to France with great low prices. With Irish Ferries, you can for less less. Irish Ferries, see you travel differently. T's and C's apply.
Calling all young creatives. Kickstart your career in media. Apply now and join us in years 10 or 12 at Global Academy. globalacademy.com.
At Wix, the Home and Garden event is now on. Save on Dulux Standard 2.5 litre coloured emulsion. Was £24, now £16. Ends Wednesday. Terms apply.
Shine Night Walk London is a 10K, half marathon or full marathon supported walk around the city at night on the 19th of September to raise vital money for Cancer Research UK. It's also...
everyone walking with all their colours, twinkling away.
We can actually see how nice London is. And London is different at night time.
Celebration of life, and it gives hope.
Step towards a brighter future at shinewalk.org today to get 30% off your entry. Together, we are beating cancer. T's and C's apply.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
20 after 8, we're going to come on to the idea of a march or a static protest. Just to put to bed for me, I'm sure other my colleagues will take it forward, but the idea of Zach Polansky's comments, really interested in this. This is coming from Rob. I retired from the West Mids after 30 years last year. What these armchair commentators never understand is that when a voltage of a taser is stopped, the subject can still have full control. I've reviewed numerous incidents where a tasered individual immediately jumps back to their feet once the voltage stops and continues to be a threat. These officers have acted with public safety, not their own foremost, in mind. Commentators should have a better understanding before they mouth off. But that, oh, thank you. That doesn't include you, Nick. Thank you for that. This comes in from Ray in Warrington. In any other country, the alleged terrorist would have been shot from a distance. Nick in Gillingham. If the alleged attack hadn't been stopped by the police, he'd have gone on to possibly kill other victims. I wonder if Zach Polansky would mind them stopping him with that kind of force. It was him or one of his loved ones that was in their way. And lastly, someone who asks me to respect their anonymity, and I shall. My partner works for the police. She works extremely hard, 12 hours a day. I'm afraid today she does things I would not be able to do. They're extremely dedicated. They need praise, not criticism, from these sofa warriors who probably wouldn't do half, if any, of what she does every day. Hear, hear to that. Should we get on to the idea of a march, or should it be a static protest? Jonah's in Sheffield. Jonah, your view. Good morning.
Hi, Nick. Thank you very much for having me on.
Not at all.
My view is that I don't think it's beneficial to anyone, really, to ban the march. As a young Jewish person, the right to protest should remain for any Brit, and I think that it would actually do quite a bit of negative damage to Jewish people for it to be seen nationally that this protest is being banned in the wake of this horrific anti-Semitic attack.
Do you not hear when the Prime Minister says that these, in some instances, some of these marchers, not all, are venerating the murder of Jews? They are, Jonah, aren't they?
Yes, so I do agree with that in part. However, how can you ban a protest in whole? So what you said before was really key. Words, words, words. And I think what the Jewish community are feeling at the minute is that words can feel so empty, but then again, on these marches, so hateful. As we've seen, Starmer did not receive a nice welcome when he got to Golders Green yesterday or the day before, whereas on these hate marches, the words that are being rung out genuinely do strike fear into the Jewish community. But I do think banning the protest as a whole sets a really dangerous precedent.
So what you're saying is, let's just think this through, Jonah, we allow the demo to go on. When people start chanting to globalise the Intifada, or they arrive with pictures of people on paragliders, we go in and nick them.
I think the police should have the powers that they need, and in the wake of the rise in the terror threat level, absolutely, if they need more powers, that's something I'm completely in agreement with. But I don't think you can carpet ban the whole march, but absolutely the police must clamp down on any anti-Semitism they hear, and I'm sure there will be an increased police presence there.
Then lastly, and I'm not saying you're wrong, but it's going to get pretty ugly.
I agree, and that is something I hate. I really wish that the whole protest was peaceful.
Jonah, it won't be. So surely we take smarter action, more precipitate action, and we temporarily ban marches. Static protest is another thing, but we ban marches temporarily.
If that's what the security briefing suggests, then yes, but genuinely I think it's very dangerous precedent set, because then who says that a march against anti-Semitism won't be banned in the near future?
Well, of course, that's, we heard Neil Basu, there's one being planned for May the 10th, and of course then you can't have that, although possibly they would settle for a static protest, static demonstration. Jonah, thank you. John in Coventry. John, you're on the radio. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Ferrari.
Hello,
I just want to commend you on highlighting this issue. It's been one of these things that's been not been taken hold of, and it's got quite out of control, hasn't it, really?
I think it probably has.
Yeah, I think this whole thing, the government sort of hidden away from it, and until it has been highlighted and it has been focused upon, then the government takes action, which is the mood music for pretty much all of Labour. And it's a shame that people can actually call for a specific religion's death, and they call it a peaceful process. I mean, years ago, they used to say the EDL and C-18, I don't think they called for death, but they were jumped upon because of the mentality of what they were trying to put across. And I think the same thing is happening with Jewish people. And I don't think a march against anti-Semitism would be calling for death of anybody. I think they'd just be asking for fairness.
John, what do you think lies behind the government's seeming reluctance to take any decisive action?
Well, they've got sitting on the fence so much, they've got splinters in the backside, haven't they? They're just paralysed. I mean,
some people say, and it has been written, is the Sakir Starmer is very frightened of alienating the Muslim vote. I want to stress here that there's no indication that the attack that we're talking about was carried out in any way. So I want to make that absolutely plain. But he cannot be seen to put offside his Muslim vote in certain areas. Is there any strength to that, John?
Well, you can't be held to ransom, can you? If people are saying, we want to be, you know, I mean, another thing, you want to rename, prevent, enable, really, because I can't see what they're actually doing. They've been around for 20 years, and every time there's an issue like this, the person was on their list, and you think, well, why are you giving false confidence to people that are actually being threatened on British soil, this is Britain, this is a first world country.
Absolutely right, John. Thank you for your kind words about the show. Just need to say, of course, that charges have been brought on that one, so we can't get too deep into the prevent conversation. But, John, thank you for your input. Jason in Marylebone, let's come back to one we can discuss. No legal problems here, talking about whether to march or not to march. That is the question. What is the answer? Jason, good morning.
Good morning, Nick. First of all, I have to publicly thank you and everybody else at the CST and everything that you do, and I have to say that publicly, so thank you.
Not a thing. Good.
October the 7th, 2023, that evening, as a British Jew, I realised how much trouble we're probably going to be in when I literally witnessed with my own eyes celebrations on the streets of death in Israel. People that got... So once you see that happen, yeah, with your... And this isn't stories, this is with my own actual eyes. And then you get Suella Braverman, who then called these marches hate marches, and yet she got ridiculed for that.
Mm-hmm. Are they hate marches, do you think?
I don't want to label it as everybody on those marches are creating hate, because they're not. And as I say, you know where I am. I'm in Oxford Circus. I sell my crepes there.
Right.
I'm there on a Saturday. I was watching this happen week after week after week. And
but let's just remind ourselves of what the Prime Minister said. And we're not saying every marcher, but the Prime Minister said, if you see people venerating the murder of Jews, if you see people marching with people with pictures of paragliders, those are the Prime Minister's words. He recognises it as well, Jason.
But then why has he done nothing about it?
I don't know.
These marches started in 2023. We're now in 2026. So now he's coming out and saying this stuff, but other politicians were saying it when they could see it. And yet he was saying, oh, no, we mustn't ban these marches. Well, either you agree with it or you don't.
Jason, thank you for that. Good luck. Stay safe this weekend. I have to finish to get other people involved. I had said we'd close down the Zach, and thank you for kind words about the show. I had said we'd close down the Zach Polanski asket, but I want to read this out from Yoni. I am a Green Party voter, and I still will be, but Zach should have kept quiet until he had the facts and thought things through. Mental health issues aren't always obvious, and the police wouldn't have necessarily known. We might look at where the Green Party's gone, actually, later in the show. Thank you for that. But one thing we've been looking at since, gosh, the early part of March is the problems with those fuel prices.
Nick Ferrari's Fuel Tracker on LBC.
Because with the Iran conflict, we've seen those prices soar. And if you were listening on the 10th of March when we started it, you know we had four fuel trackers. We've already spoken to our men in London and in Scotland. So let's go to the northeast. And it's good to have Mohammed. You've moved town. This has been going on so long, my friend. You're now in Newcastle. I'm glad, because actually the rental story we're going to discuss, that affected you as well, didn't it, buddy? Morning, Mohammed.
Morning, Nick. Great show, by the way. Yeah, it did very quickly affect me. I had to move home, so obviously, you know, never mind.
Never mind. You've got a new place, so you're in Newcastle.
I'm in Newcastle.
All right. Okay, let's get those northeast prices, Mohammed.
Right, so the unleaded is 159.
Yep.
And the diesel is 199.
Whoa, that's a whopper. Thanks, Mohammed. Have a good weekend. Just to remind you, when we started on the 10th of March, I'll give you unleaded without the 0.9s. Unleaded 131, diesel 133. This morning, unleaded 159, diesel 199. That is the most expensive. I've got all the figures in front of me. Man alive, I've been an accountant. But well, not that I would ever be one. That is the highest diesel anywhere. And it's gone up 2p. Yes, it's gone up 2p since the last time we spoke with Mohammed. Although unleaded, interestingly, it's come down 4p. It's up and down, isn't it? All right, Mohammed, thank you. Down to the southwest, young Mark in Plymouth. Hello, Mark. What you got for us?
Hi, Nick. Hi, great show as usual.
Thank you.
Petrol's 157 and diesel is 188.
188.9. Safe driving. Have a good holiday weekend if you're getting one. Again, context. When we started this on the 10th of March, unleaded 133. This morning, 157. Diesel, 140. This morning, 188. And from the last time we spoke, it's down. It's down a touch. It's down a touch when we spoke in April. Down from 190 to 188 diesel. Unleaded stays the same. We'll go around. Gosh, we've been running through about 6 weeks, haven't we now? We will do that again in the upcoming times, I am sure. Coming up after the news, I briefly touched on that with my friend Mohammed. A new era, the right old shake-up in renters' rights. But what will it actually mean for landlords too? That's after this 8:30 breakfast with me, Nick Ferrari, here on LBC. Newstime, Lottie Morley.
A man has been charged with attempted murder after two Jewish men were stabbed in Golders Green. The terror threat level has now been raised to severe in the UK. Speaking to LBC, the Metropolitan Police Commissioner, Sir Mark Rowley, has said there should be permanent teams based in Jewish communities. 11 million private tenants in England will have stronger rights from today. The Renters' Rights Act marks the end of no-fault evictions, meaning they can't be forced to leave without a valid justification. And King Charles has arrived in Bermuda after his four-day state visit to the US. He'll spend 3 days on the island, focusing on conservation and biodiversity projects. LBC weather, a warm start across the UK with lots of sunshine on the way, a high of 24 degrees.
Tom Swarbrick on LBC.
So you get the ridiculous situation of 20-somethings wandering around central London calling on the Houthis to hit another cargo tanker in the Strait of Hormuz. And when you ask them, well, who are this group that you are telling supporting in their targeting of these ships that are making their way through the Strait of Hormuz, you've got no idea. No surprise leads to an atmosphere in which the people who are being hit by your words have to hide themselves away.
Tom Swarbrick, Monday to Friday from 4 p.m. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
McDonald's breakfast is turning up the heat with a spicy new twist. Calm down, not that spicy. Breakfast is for savoring, not suffering. Introducing McDonald's breakfast with Frank's Red Hot Ketchup. A spicy breakfast suitable for the morning.
until 8th of June, served until 11 a.m, subject to availability.
3, 2, sun. EasyJet's Big Orange Sale is now on, with up to £400 off package holidays and up to 20% off flights. Book now at EasyJet.com. Get out there. Selected dates and flights, sale ends 5th of May. Holidays minimum spend and after protected. T's and C's apply.
It's Munich, 1936, and all eyes are on the capital for the upcoming Olympic Games. As athletes fight for gold and the Nazis fight for power, Detective Sebastian Wolf faces a battle of his own. In a search that will take him from high society to the city's darkest corners, Wolf is about to learn just how easily the hunter becomes the hunted. Evil in High Places is the gripping new historical thriller from the million-copy bestseller Rory Clements. Out now.
Fancy being spoilt for choice when it comes to your new kitchen? Wix has over 80 kitchen styles and hundreds of cabinet options, so there's something for every home. Plus, choose from a wide range of leading appliance brands and beautiful worktops. Book your free kitchen design appointment at Wix.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973.
We'll talk about that right old shake-up in renters' rights in just a moment. But Joe's in Tooting, hanging on some time about whether we should allow a static demo, whether we should ban the march. Due in 2 weeks tomorrow. What action should they be taking and should be taken? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick, and I hope you're well.
Good,
I'm just going to comment. I haven't seen you on TV for a little while, so you do let's come in your next song, because I do enjoy your contributions on the television.
Oh, that's so good. Well, that'll be this morning, Tuesday and Thursday of next week, around 11 o'clock, if you're near a television, so there we go.
I will definitely try sure I say that.
Well,
yeah, so what I've got to tell you is I'm not part of the Middle Eastern diaspora, so I haven't got any skin in the game, but I really can't see how we could possibly ban these marches, because all we'd end up doing is having people protesting about the fact that we ban the process. It'd be another decreasing circle of more protests and more ugliness on the streets of London. What we really need to do is find out why people are complaining what's happening in the Middle East with the Jewish community.
Jewish people living here. As if they're authorising the airstrikes. Two men walking around gold as green.
We've got to somehow break that link, Nick. We've got to somehow see if there's a way in which we can change people's perceptions. Because let's have a look at the etching gear, which was prescribed by the government a little while ago for getting to that military base. Even that, people in the jury were willing to believe them over the government.
That's what we call thank the Lord. That's what we call our legal process, of course.
Yeah, exactly. But a great deal of public opinion seems to be on the side of the Palestinians, and we can understand that. But what we need to do is break the animosity which has been pointed towards the people of the Jewish community in our country.
But isn't that done through education, Joe?
The people who are doing these marches, they're not going to be willing to be re-educated. They've already got their opinion. What we've got to try and do is get the rest of society to see how we can break the link, literally break the link between what's happening in the Middle East and how we treat the people of the Jewish community within our country.
But if you're so blinkered that you can't see that it is a quantum leap from what somebody might be doing walking up and down a high street in gold as green to what the Israel IDF are doing, I don't know how you can ever wake people up to that.
Yeah, but you've got instances where people can point to reservists from the UK have gone over and fought Israel and then came back, and they're going to say, well, you can't say you're not connected. Well, you're actually going out there and fighting for them. So how can you say you're not somehow part of the problem that's happening in the Middle East? You're not part of the people being killed in Palestine. Firstly, you're not part of the problem of people being killed in Lebanon. You're actually going out there fighting and then coming back and living in our community.
Well, hang on. National service is part of the requirement of being in Israel.
Yeah, no, I know. I can understand that, Nick. Yes. But you can see how people put the seat there. So
I do. I get that. But again, this, I think he was a 75-year-old man who was attacked, and we can say he was attacked, there's no doubt about that, in Golders Green. I doubt that he was one of the commanders of the IDF. Joe, look after yourself. Thank you. The line's starting to deteriorate a bit, so we will move on at 8:36. We will return to this subject, but let's pick up on a story you've already heard covered on the LBC News Bulletin, which is 11 million private tenants in England have stronger rights and protections from today, helping to transform their experiences in the sector. The Renters' Rights Act will signal the end of Section 21 no-fault evictions, meaning private landlords will not be able to evict tenants without a valid justification. Meanwhile, this comes as solicitors say they've been inundated with requests to serve last gasp, Section 21s, before that ban came in. This has been hailed as the biggest reform to renting in a generation, banning no-fault evictions, limited rent increases and abolish fixed-term tenancies. Let's speak with... Well, let's a little... Here first, Housing Secretary Steve Reid hailing today as a landmark in this field.
They will ban unfair, so-called no-fault evictions, where landlords kick people out just so that they can put the rent up for new tenants. It bans mid-year rent increases. It bans landlords from discriminating against families who are on benefits.
But as we've heard in the past when this was first mooted, a lot of people who are landlords are, in some instances, have already served notices to get their tenants out and will now sell the property. And it is the most basic law of economics of supply and demand. If a lot of people have these properties and they decide, up with this, we will not put and we'll sell, and people who are fortunate enough to have the money to make a deposit, to reach a deposit and then make a mortgage arrangements, fewer properties, that means command will higher rent. So does it actually work? Neil France is a landlord and renting out properties, I think, in Essex. How many properties do you have, Neil? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. I've got four up on the Wirral Peninsula and three HMOs down in Essex.
OK. How long have you been in the game?
It's challenging. I think business is always challenging. I think the issues seem to be coming thick and fast in terms of the regulatory changes, always associated with a huge stick. If you don't do this by this date, you're going to get a huge fine. So I can understand for people who are not sort of professional landlords, but have maybe got one property or two properties, are moving out of the market.
It's worth saying those people make up about 60-odd% of the rental market, those who have two or fewer.
That's absolutely right. And I think the biggest impact for me, and I've only literally issued a Section 21 a couple of weeks ago. First one I've ever done, because I have what I feel is very good relationships with my tenants. I only do an increase once a year, so that fits with the renters' rights bill. But what it does mean is that the level of risk has just ratcheted up considerably. So what does that mean? I've got a property on the Wirral at the moment and I'm looking to let. I no longer want just all references in terms of credit, employment, a landlord reference. I now want a second landlord reference. In other words, the landlord that was before the current landlord. And the rationale for that is that they won't have any particular skin in the game, because there are landlords, and I know you won't believe this, but there are landlords who actually issue a reference in order to get rid of a tenant and don't necessarily tell the truth. So it is becoming extremely risky, because if you do have somebody that not just fails to pay but causes antisocial behaviour, what that means is that the process could take, I don't know, 9, 12, 14 months. So the
Section 21 you've just put through, might I ask, was that for non-payment?
No, the tenant was paying on time. They actually looked after the house very, very well. I've got no complaints at all. But getting weekly phone calls from the neighbour next door complaining about the amount of cannabis smoke coming into their property.
Right.
The neighbour at the bottom with the daughter couldn't open their bedroom windows because of the cannabis. It just got too much, and I said, you've got to go. It's not fair on everybody else. So that was the only one. Normally, I would negotiate with tenants and steer well clear of the court system. Looking at the upgraded court system that we're allegedly getting, that's not happened yet. I believe the government's going to be putting about £50 million into improving it.
Right.
But it makes me extremely nervous about going anywhere near the courts.
Let me ask you this. The Housing Secretary, Steve Reid, saying this will end mid-term evictions, people being evicted, sudden rent increases. Be fair, how much of that was going on? Was it widespread?
I think what you've got here, Nick, is you've got what I class as professional landlords that implement many, many of the things that's covered in the Renters' Rights Bill. So they've got not huge changes to make, except obviously the regulatory tax changes, etc. But there's a lot of landlords out there, and people who've got any sorts of issues will have to go to those sorts of landlords. If you've got a CCGA against your name, I doubt you're going to be able to find a rental property. But there will be landlords that will say, you pay me cash, I'm not going to put your deposit in a government approved scheme. And those are the people who will just completely ignore the renters' rights bill and carry on doing what they're doing and preying on vulnerable tenants who have got no alternative.
I understand also, as part of this new legislation, an incoming tenant, you're only required 1 month's rent, whereas I understand it used to be 1 month's rent and then one sort of in lieu in case any damage was done or whatever it might be. Is that correct, Neil?
I've only ever charged 1 month's rent, so I think it was 5 weeks you're allowed to charge at one point, but it's down to 1 month. But I've had a number of properties taken back from tenants in an absolutely shocking state. One of the advantages I understand from the renters' rights bill is that I'll now be able to pursue those tenants and get a counter-court judgment against them. And that will have a significant impact in terms of their ability to rent ever again. So there are some teeth related to that, I have to say.
Neil France, good luck with the properties that you have up in the Wirral and down some of them here in Essex as well. Calls coming in on this. Jason in Putney. Jason, what does it mean? Thanks, Mr. France. What does it mean to you, Jason? Good morning.
Well, basically, just to give a bit of backstory, me and my wife, we bought a flat in 2017. We paid £390,000 for a one-bed flat. It was our first property, first-time buyers. And then we had a kid in 2021. We stayed in that property for 2 years, but it got too small, so we decided to move out, and we wanted to sell our property, and we couldn't sell our property due to...
COVID.
Yeah, due to COVID, yeah, because people's mindsets changed,
yeah,
and because we were getting nowhere near the money we wanted. And so we rent it out, and we've rented it out for 2.5 years now. We've got some great tenants. But with this renter...
How nervous are you about this new legislation, though, Joe? I know you've got great tenants now, and I'm delighted, but they might want to move on. They might want to buy their own, and suddenly your tenants might not be so great, Jason. Isn't that the reality?
Well, we've just sold our property.
Oh, you've sold it, right.
And it wasn't our intention to sell it. For me, I'm self-employed. I'm a landscaper. It was going to be some form of a pension. Now we're not making any money on this rental because by the time we pay tax, we paid the mortgage and paid for anything else like the fees for the estate agents. We make no money on this. Okay, a little bit in equity, but. We make no money. But with all these things coming in, we've sold it. Now, just quickly again, if we sell, we've sold this property, if that falls through, so we've got to give these 4 months notice. And then once the 4 months notice starts, if it then falls through and the tenant has left, we can't re-let our property for 1 year. So that means that for 1 year...
Have you still got a mortgage on it? Yes, presumably.
We've got the mortgage on there, yeah. It's buy-to-let. So we changed it into a buy-to-let. But we can't have any tenants in that property for a year.
So you can't put the price up. Is that what they're doing? You don't evict a tenant?
Yeah,
you evict a tenant in April and you put the price up in June. That's what they're trying to avoid.
Exactly that. Yeah, but obviously people like myself who are, we don't necessarily want the flat. I mean, we would have sold it before, but, just circumstances meant we kept it. We've got great tenants. They're great people. They pay their rent every month, no issues at all. We have to sell out. And I think that's the case for a lot of people that we know, that were in similar situations. We sold it cheaper than we want to sell it for.
You've got a bit of a nervy time until you actually exchange, haven't you? Or complete.
Well, we have. And like I say, if it falls through, then that's 1 year without us being able to put a tenant in the property. So we're going to, I've got two kids now. I've just recently had one 9 weeks ago.
Congratulations.
And we've got the worry now that if it doesn't go through, then for 1 year, we've got to pay a mortgage of over £20,000 on top of the rent that we pay. On top of the rent that we've got to pay in our new property, which we live in Windsor now, the whole thing is a mess.
It really does sound like a mess, Jason. I do hope it goes through all right. Thank you. Jim says landlords will sell their houses. Who do you think we're buying these houses? The people who were previously renting, or buying the house of the landlord? No, they won't, Jim. They won't have the money.
a lot of those people wouldn't own, are only in rental because they haven't got money to put down as a deposit. If it was that so straightforward, obviously it wouldn't be the same. It's the same issue. There's no sympathy for landlords here. Josh, cry me a river. What do these landlords think happens when they sell up? Goes to another landlord or gives someone their own home. These people are just upset that they get less. Shove your privilege in a low-yield savings account. That's Joshua in Coventry. Joshua, again, you just heard that man, and I hope it doesn't, I really do, but potentially he could lose £20,000 if the sale falls through because he's not allowed to re-rent. That cannot be fair. We'll come back to our conversation about events in North London and, of course, events possibly in 2 week and a day time when there is meant to be another big rally, but should it be a static one? And remind you that the Prime Minister said this yesterday.
I call on everyone to come together and fight anti-Semitism.
So how do we physically, actually, practically do that? We'll speak with an imam and a priest later in the show. 8:47, LBC News headlines. Lottie Morley.
A man has been charged with attempted murder after a double stabbing in Golders Green. 11 million private tenants in England will have stronger rights from today. And King Charles has arrived in Bermuda after his four-day state visit to the US. LBC weather, a warm start across the UK with lots of sunshine and a high of 24 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Long delays on the M25 both ways to Junction 11 at Chertsey. It's after an accident that happened earlier, although all the lanes are now back open. Also very busy on the M25 clockwise to Junction 30 at the A13. A car's broken down, so one lane is closed for recovery. In Barking, Longbridge Road remains closed eastbound, and that's because of an ongoing investigation. Also in Fulham, Dawes Road is closed because of an investigation. On the Underground, there are now severe delays on the Piccadilly line, so it's back up and running. This is after that signal failure that happened earlier at King's Cross. And also on the Underground, there are minor delays on the District Line eastbound between Barking and Upminster after a train broke down earlier.
This is LBC.
As fuel prices continue to rise, running costs are getting harder to ignore. So MG is making the switch to electric simpler with a £1,500 MG EV car grant, 0% APR representative and zero deposit required across the MG EV range, excluding MG IM5 and MG IM6. A smart move, made simple. Book your test drive today at mg.co.uk. MG Motor UK are a credit broker, not a lender. PCP balloon payment required for ownership. Registered by June 30th. T's and C's at mg.co.uk.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973. LBC.
With an Amex business card, Selena's earning points renovating her skin clinic and refreshing the builders.
14 coffees and 28 sugars, please.
And on new adjustable chairs for every room. And she can use the points to lie back and relax.
Don't put ice cream on your brother's head.
Well, sometimes. And that's because with an Amex business card, your points can go towards holidays and more.
Search Amex business card. Interest fees and terms apply. Available to UK limited companies and limited liability partnerships. Signatories must be a director or member of the business. Subject to approval.
Oh, you want weight loss advice?
Weight loss? Actually, what you want to do is...
I got my weight loss secret from my mother, who got it from her mother's
my tip
weight
is,
loss?
I... No, forget that. No, you just
keep dancing. Dragon fruit.
Podcast.
Advice.
Or you could go to MedExpress. MedExpress. Healthcare without the noise. Go to medexpress.co.uk/weightloss.
Ali 60 milligram hard capsules contain orlistat for overweight adults with a BMI of 28 plus. Follow a reduced calorie, low fat diet. Always read the label.
What's the best present you ever got for your birthday? I bet it wasn't as life changing as £1 million. Every week with the birthday draw, there's £1 million to be won, and you can enter from as little as £1 or via post. Enter by midnight on Sunday, and your special day could win you £1 million. Visit thebirthdaydraw.com. Is it your lucky day? From Global and ITV. 18 plus UK only, no purchase necessary.
Calling all young creatives. It's time to get prepped for the journalism industry. And where better than Global Academy? Here's Molly, a journalism student in year 12.
Outside of the classroom, we run our own news platform called The Loop. I do a daily news bulletin and produce videos for socials. We learn everything we need to be a journalist and have even learned alongside the news team at Global.
Global Academy. Apply now and join us in years 10 or 12. GlobalAcademy.com.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973.
Let's continue our conversation concerning these changes in rental rights. This comes in. Do remember to sign them. Jenny has this change is ultimately bad for good tenants who fall on hard times.
as if they're behind on rent, they will have a CCJ, which is County Court Judgment, and a debt to pay off. It'll also be harder to rent again. Good landlords are doing most of this already. Bad landlords will simply ignore it. This comes in from Sam. I was previously renting and bought my first home in March. Congratulations. The seller was a landlord. If landlords do choose to sell, they won't all go to other landlords. They won't, but it's wrong to think that everyone... And I agree, and good luck, well done. Congratulations to you, Sam. But it would be wrong to think that everyone who is a tenant would have the means by which they could buy a property, of course. I think we need to say that as well. This comes from Jake in Epping. People who rent may have enough saved up for a deposit, but only if house prices drop. A flood of houses on the market should drop the price. Then you have people who were previously renting out who are now in the market for their first property. That's if they're prepared... You're right. That's if they're prepared to take on what are said to be some of the concerns about this new legislation. Let's get more calls on this. Jane is in Brill. Jane, you're on the radio. Hello.
Hello. Good morning, Nick.
What's your story?
I listen every morning, and I think you're the start of my day every day.
Oh, you're so kind. Thank you. Thank you. You're in a lovely part of the world, Buckinghamshire. I do like
beautiful.
Buckinghamshire. Yeah.
Well, I live in a beautiful village, and there is very little to rent here. I've been here for 8 years.
Right.
I've been in my property for 4 years.
Right.
I just signed a lease last month for another year.
Right.
I'm a business director, and I travel a lot for my work.
Okay.
And I was given a Section 21 because they now want to sell the property. So, out of the blue...
Had a good relationship with the landlord?
Fantastic. Right. Fantastic. I pay on time. I'm a single person. I'm on my own now. I'm 68. I can't get a mortgage at my age, and I don't have the deposit. So, my problem is, I want to stay in my village. There's only one property available. If I want to take it, I have to move within a month. And within that month, I have to find another deposit of £1,700 before I get my last deposit back. And because I work, I'm not here to move. I have got maybe 3 weekends to move, and I'm travelling for work. So I then have to pay £2,000 to get people to move me, which I don't have because I wasn't figuring that I'd be needing to do this I just signed a year's lease. So I think for a lot of people, it's going to make them struggle financially, because how do I find another £1,700 deposit when I wasn't expecting it?
And also those moving costs are absolutely huge. You can't do
that. Well, exactly. I'm on my own. I'm 68 and I live on my own. I don't have a partner. So can you just pack a few boxes?
No.
It's not that simple. And the thing is, I want to stay in my village. My daughter lives down the road. I've been here 8 years. I love it. But there's only one property available, one. And this is going to be very... If I don't get this property, then I can't move out of this house. And what am I going to do?
Well, that's what I was going to ask you. What are you going to do?
Well, I'm hoping I'm going to move. I'm hoping the landlord is going to help me towards my move, because I think this is very unfair. Having been told I was going to be here for another year and planned my work. I work. I don't sit at home all day. So how do people... I don't know how people are going to manage. I think it's very, very, very unfair.
And just to clarify, the Section 21 has been served because your landlords want to sell the property?
Correct. Yeah, because they just had an electrical thing every 5 years, and there were some issues in the kitchen. They needed to redo all the lighting, and I think they just thought, we don't want to pay for this. We've got this Section 21 coming up. Let's just sell the property. My estate agent said they just want to sell.
Had this legislation not come in, you'd probably be there for another 5 years, wouldn't you?
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely, absolutely.
So it's
very disrupting.
And you just hope that you will be able to find another property, or?
Well, I've seen one. They want me to move in a month, which gives me.
Yeah.
They need £1,700 deposit, which I won't get till I get the deposit back from this one, until it's been signed off as being okay. It's not going to come in time for me to pay the deposit on the other property. So you're in a catch-22. If you've paid £1,500 deposit and you want it back to pay for another place.
Would the landlord not help facilitate that, perhaps? Could they not...
I have written him a note to say...
Okay. Is it called a security deposit or something? Is that what they're called?
Yes, that's right.
Right.
Yes.
Well, if that could be freed up, that might see you anyway. Jane, I do hope it works out for you. Obviously, you want to stay in the area. You've got your daughter close to hand. And you love the village and you enjoy it. Let us know how you get on, Jane. Thinking of you, have a good holiday weekend. If you're not travelling, possibly travelling for business, you sound a very busy woman. Thank you for that. We might talk more about renting, but a lot of people have been hanging on the line. They want to talk about what should happen a fortnight tomorrow with a demo, one of the pro-Palestinian demos. Should it go static, as some are suggesting? Samina in Tooting, what would you recommend? Samina, good morning.
Morning, Nick. I don't think we should be banning any marches. They just need to be policed better. And my understanding is on the 16th of May, there's also a Unite the Right march on the same day.
Right. If you say so, I'm not... Can we double-check that? Yeah, go on.
Yeah, so the police apparently have let Tommy Robinson use the route that he wants to use for the march, and the pro-Palestinian march has now had to be rerouted.
Right.
And just one quick point on
it
the
is
last
correct. Sorry.
Unite...
I'm sorry, I'm going to be rude. You are absolutely right. I'm just telling my listeners... Someone's telling me it's correct, so I'm telling the listeners it's correct. You're absolutely right, Samina. Do go on. Yep.
Yeah, I was just about to make the point. In the last Unite the Right march, there was lots of British and Israeli flags. And what you didn't report on the radio, there was lots of chants of kill the Arabs, kill the Arabs. So I think that all these marches need to be policed better. And it'd be really good if you get someone like maybe Ben Jamal from the Palestinian Solidarity Campaign on to actually ask him what they're going to be doing with their wardens and others.
Well, if we decide that the pro-Palestinians have to be static... Surely this far-right demo has to be static as well, doesn't it?
Well, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
And obviously, I would suggest either sides of the river, which is a pretty good barrier, the River Thames.
And they've done that before.
They have. Mm. Okay, that seems a solution. Thank you. I was not aware, and I'm very grateful you've made me aware. You can't have sort of free roam. Well, not free roam. It will be on a designated route. But you can't have a different approach to one group and to another, I would suggest. Kevin in Oxford. Kevin, your view...
This debacle with this marching now. I'm fed up of hearing about freedom of speech and all this nonsense. I lived through the Northern Ireland marches.
As did I.
Sorry, it's a bad...
Yeah, okay, just make the point. You're fed up. Okay, you lived through the Northern Ireland marches. Yeah, just go ahead.
And all the violence it caused with the Orange marches and the Catholic marches. We don't need, in this country, people stirring up violence and trouble with these marches.
But not everybody on the march is doing that, Kevin. Some of them want to make their legitimate point about their views of Israel.
Do you know, Nick, the people in this country have had enough flags.
No, we must allow demonstrations. They have
to then you're not going to cure it, Nick. You're not going to cure it. And this nonsense, Nick, about, you know, education at schools. These aren't bits of kids that are going around stabbing people. Lee Rigby wasn't beheaded by bits of kids.
Okay, I hear what you say, but... Yes, there will be generations that we won't get to, Kevin, but I'm thinking of the future as well. We don't have these problems for the next generation, or certainly the generation beyond that. Kevin, I understand your anger. Thank you for your call. The line wasn't the best, so we will leave it there, and the conversation will continue. When the Prime Minister says this...
I call on everyone to come together and fight anti-Semitism.
What does he actually mean? We know what police officers have to do. I would suggest that politicians could be doing a lot more. But what are we meant to do? We'll speak with a priest and with an imam. And is the triple lock under pressure? Well, Tony Blair, through the Tony Blair Institute, says yes. But what of another party leader?
So we are saying that the triple lock is not where the problem is. The problem is people who can work, who don't work, and we need to get them off welfare and into work.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 9 o'clock, a man will appear in court later charged with attempted murder after a double stabbing in Golders Green. The government has upgraded the UK's terror threat from substantial to severe in response to a string of attacks in recent weeks. The Metropolitan Police Commissioner, Sir Mark Rowley, has told Nick Jewish communities have been feeling increasingly unsafe.
What police are dealing with and what we're trying to protect communities against, we're dealing with the symptoms of a pandemic, perhaps, of anti-Semitism, which has been building over many years.
The government has been under pressure to ban pro-Palestine marches in the aftermath of the attack. The UK's terror watchdog, Jonathan Hall, has told Nick he'd like to see the protests paused.
It should only be a pause, but there's got to be a way, hasn't there, of working out how the freedom of expression, the right to criticise Israel and its actions, if you want, how that can be done without making it so personal, frankly, against real living people.
Millions of private renters in England will have stronger rights from today. New laws will stop no-fault evictions and landlords won't be able to refuse tenants because they have children. Chris Norris is from the National Residential Landlords Association. He's told LBC the changes could be better for renters than landlords.
I don't think it'll shock you or your listeners to hear that landlords aren't quite as enthusiastic as some tenants and tenants groups are about this. It's whether you agree or disagree with what's on the face of the Act, it's an enormous disruption. And, you know, we have millions of private individuals and landlords and companies who are letting property, who are having to change the way that they go about doing that and change their operations. So it's a big day, bearing in mind that all existing and new tenancies in England are going to change.
Donald Trump has agreed to scrap tariffs on Scottish whisky following the visit from the King and Queen. The King has now travelled on to Bermuda after their four-day trip to the US ended yesterday. More than 1,500 NHS workers have used the new Martha's Rule in its first 18 months. It's a formal escalation process which gives families formalised 24/7 access to a second opinion. It was set up after the death of 13-year-old Martha Mills, who died from sepsis in South London. And a World War II bomb discovered at a building site in Plymouth will be destroyed in a controlled explosion today. More than 1,000 homes nearby have been evacuated. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading down 58 points at 10,321. The pound buys $1.36 and a euro 16. LBC weather, a warm start across the UK with lots of sunny spells, a few showers moving eastwards later and a high of 24 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Lottie Morley.
Shout out to the savvy ones tuned in across the UK.
Who? Me?
Yeah, you. The ones who know a good deal when they see one. Like the house proud who protect their manor from broken branches to burst pipes. The dog walkers who take the lead when comparing pet cover for their pampered pooches. And the drivers with breakdown cover belting out those power manners.
Well, I love you.
Here's to all of you making smart choices and finding your insurance at
Get.compare.
Now that's savvy.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Morning, 3 minutes after nine on Friday, May the 1st. Mayday, mayday, mayday. The Prime Minister says it falls to all of us now to combat anti-Semitism. I'm sure he's right, but we know what it means for brave police officers. We know what it means for some community workers equally brave. We know what it should mean for politicians. What does it mean for us? Plus, what does it mean for pensioners as the Tony Blair Institute says the triple lock should end? They have come up with a replacement, and we'll hear from a representative as they spell out exactly what that might be. And then if you are planning a May Day weekend away...
Come fly with me, let's fly away. If you can use some exotic booze, there's a bar in far Bombay.
Well, it'd be all right in Bombay, Frank, but the problem is if we land in Europe because of these new checks, and unfortunately people are reporting hundreds of people waiting dozens of hours. Mayhem at some European airports. We'll give you a full report and hear what it was like the last time you tried to get in and out of Europe.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
While I have made it plain that I think there's a lot more that politicians, not least the one from whom you're about to hear, could be doing a lot more, there is probably something to what Prime Minister said, Sir Keir Starmer said, in Downing Street last night.
This government will do everything in our power to stamp this hatred out. We will strengthen our security and protect our Jewish community. But I also call on everyone decent in this country to open their eyes to Jewish pain, Jewish suffering, and Jewish fear. I call on everyone to come together and fight anti-Semitism. And I call on everyone to fight for the decent, respectful, tolerant Britain that I and millions of people love, so that our freedom and our values can still speak loud and true to a community that can no longer take it on faith.
And we heard from the Commissioner of the Metropolitan Police that the Jewish community is one, quotes, under threat. And we heard from a minister, not the Prime Minister, a minister late earlier this morning, that it is under attack. So let's look to other faiths as to what we, they can do to help. First up, the Right Reverend Tom Williams, who's Bishop Emeritus of Liverpool. Good to have you on, sir. I'm told that I'm to address you as Bishop Tom and not Your Grace or anything else. So, Bishop Tom, what do you take from the Prime Minister's words? What sort of actions would you recommend as and when you get among your congregation on the weekend? Morning, sir.
Well, my congregation on the weekend is working in prisons.
And at the moment, I've covered two prisons. And in some ways, I suppose that they obviously listened to your radio as well. The last time I was on, they commented. I think the thing is,
did they give you good reviews, Bishop Tom, or bad reviews, sir?
They said you were on the radio. That was
brilliant.
No, I think in some ways, I suppose, I mean, I've worked with the Jewish community all my life. You know, I've been a priest for 53 years, and I was hospital chaplain, where you get everybody coming in, at all denominations, at all faiths and all creeds. Mm. And in many ways, it's about working together and listening to one another and supporting one another. I mean, many of my friends go to King David's, which is the Jewish school in Liverpool. In fact, I think a third, or nearly half of the pupils in that school are Catholic. So in many ways, we're already working together. I suppose it's... the one thing that strikes me is that sometimes when people say, well, what are we going to do differently, or what are we going to do in the future? I always reminded of my father, who once said to me, Mother, the only exercise you get, Maggie, is jumping to conclusions. Sometimes we need to jump sometimes, not be careful in doing things which could make it even worse. And I think it's about listening, it's about being there. I think continue with the good work. I mean,
because of course there are now active charges. So if I can move you away from that, perhaps put another question towards you. How do you combat a hatred, a dislike of a people because of their faith, whether it be Christian, Jewish, Muslim, or whatever? How is that to be combated, Bishop?
Well, I think I wouldn't have a boxing match. And I think sometimes I would back off and let people, vent what they say. The thing is why are they there in the first place? And I think sometimes people carry a chip on the shoulder or jump to conclusions. I think as a pastor, you've always got to listen to people and be there. And sometimes say, I'm sorry, but you're wrong. I'm sorry, but that's not the way to do it. It's early action in practice. I suppose Pope Francis once said that we need to be like a casualty department in hospitals. You can't cure the illness, but you can be there to with the victims of it and people who are suffering, and give them the support that you need, that they need.
Lastly,
it's being there with people.
Yes. It's very difficult to quarrel or quibble with what the Prime Minister said, but in reality, how likely is it that that can happen? Some would argue the issues are so great, and allowing for people who wrongly mix up the activities of Israel and the IDF with what people are doing in Golders Green or Manchester, how likely is it that we might get to the nirvana of which the Prime Minister speaks?
Well, I think the nirvana, I suppose that we can always build castles in the air. I think the thing is that you've got to have a foundation for it, and the foundation has got to be listening. And the foundation's got to be aware of our own sort of prejudices as well. I think in some ways, I've always been into situations where if I don't know what who other people are, I think sometimes I've just got to listen.
Yes.
Like, for example, in the prisons.
And let's hope they're listening to this now and they give you a warm reception and good reviews when you return on the weekend. Thank you, Right Reverend Tom Williams, Bishop Emeritus of Liverpool, speaking for That Faith. Let's bring to the conversation Sheikh Ibrahim Mogra, who's an imam from Leicester, active in interfaith relations. When you hear the Prime Minister's words, Imam, how do you interpret them? What do you think you should do? What will you be saying to the people who perhaps are at your mosque later today? Good morning.
Good morning. Well, the first thing that I must do, and every decent human being must do, is to condemn the attack on these two Jewish people, and we pray for their speedy recovery. We are totally in agreement with our Prime Minister. We have to do a lot more to tackle anti-Semitism. We should not tolerate it at all. And we must remember that we cannot blame every Jew for what Israel does. We have to make that distinction. Just as people do not want to be blamed for the actions of other terrorist organizations and they distance themselves, we must also acknowledge that there are many Jews who wish to see peace in the Middle East, who desire to see a free Palestine and a secure Israel. And there are many who stand against the current Israeli government and their policies vis-a-vis the occupation. We also must make sure that what happens abroad, we do not import that onto our streets. We live here together, side by side, as communities, and we share the same spaces. Many of us work together. We shop from the same places, etc. And we must learn to respect one another. We can disagree on the policies. I am very, very angry with the Israeli policies. I feel real frustration and helplessness. But that does not give me the license to harm a Jewish person here in the United Kingdom or anywhere else, because they are innocent people who are going about their day-to-day businesses. What we must do is work with those who wish to seek justice and respect for international law.
But Imam, and you're an educated man and everything you say is right, but how do you get that message across to others as the Prime Minister is urging? Obviously, you wouldn't be in the position as an Imam if you weren't educated. So how do you impart that message to others is my question.
Well, a lot of it falls on us as leaders of our respective faith traditions, in our sermons, in our talks to our congregations, to remind them the teachings of our faith, which call on the dignity of humans to be respected, to see everyone as the creation of God, as the family of God, and not to harm anyone. And we must also take this step, which is a must, that we must condemn anti-Semitism with all of our might, because there is no room for hatred in any of our religions, including in Islam. We also must try and find activities that bring us together. I'm involved in many meetings with Jewish leadership within our country and other faith groups. There are many activities at the community level. This past Ramadan, I know of synagogues, for instance, that held iftar, the breaking of the fast events, and invited people from all backgrounds. And these are wonderful occasions when we get to meet Jewish people who are just, who are kind, and who wish to see peace and justice in the Middle East. And that needs to be acknowledged. And I need to tell that to my congregation. My congregation needs to hear this, that there are good people out there who are in favor of peace and justice in the Middle East.
And lastly, a question, Imam. Leicester is a city I know very well because my mother was raised there, so I'm aware of the makeup of it. How secure do Muslims feel? I mean, there's a lot of attention, obviously, on Jewish folk as a result of Manchester last year, North Londoner. How secure are the Muslim community in the city?
We are very grateful that we live in a truly multicultural and peaceful society. We've had our ups and downs, we've had problems. But I think nationally, Muslim people who are very easily identified on the streets are very anxious. There have been attacks on Muslims, especially women who wear the scarf, for example. Yeah. So people are worried and are being careful. Many times we hear attacks on mosques. Okay. People have been fearful, including not wanting to attend congregational prayer in a mosque, especially in the late hours. Right. But if all communities stand up together and regard an attack on one as an attack on all of us, whether we belong to a faith or not, and see ourselves as human beings, as equal citizens, then we can look out for each other and care for one another, make sure that everyone's safe.
Thank you for your time today, sir. Give my love to the great city of Leicester, won't you, Imam? One I know very well. Thank you, Sheikh Ibrahim Mogra, an Imam from Leicester. So how to put the Prime Minister's words into action? We'll take your calls on that. Plus, is it farewell to the triple lock? Tony Blair thinks it should be. More on that after the 9:15 LBC News headlines, read by Lottie Morley.
A man will appear in court later, charged with attempted murder after a double stabbing in Golders Green. Millions of private renters in England will have stronger rights from today. And Donald Trump has agreed to scrap tariffs on Scottish whisky following the King and Queen's state visit. LBC weather, a warm start across the UK with lots of sunshine and a high of 24 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. There are delays on the M25 clockwise to Junction 11 at Chertsey, and that was after an accident that happened earlier. Also, delays embarking. The Longbridge Road is closed eastbound because of an ongoing investigation, and in Fulham, Dawes Road is closed both ways, and that's also because of an investigation. There are queues on the A3 southbound heading towards the Cathedral Turn at Guildford, and that's following an accident. On the Underground, there are severe delays on the entire Piccadilly line, and that was after a signal failure that happened earlier this morning at King's Cross. And then also on the Underground, there are severe delays on the District line between Barking and Upminster after the fire alarms went off earlier at Upminster Bridge.
This is LBC.
Fancy a trip to France without the fancy price tag? Go all Irish. With great low prices, travel from Dover to Calais with Irish ferries and you'll have France at your feet in 90 minutes. Can-can. Less. More money, less money. You get the picture. Get a warm Irish welcome on board and a cool pint of the black stuff on us. Zero alcohol, of course, when you book direct at irishferries.com. Escargot on, then. Irish Ferries. See travel differently. T's and C's apply.
This is LBC. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app. Download it now from your app store.
Have you spotted anything?
Only seagulls. Are you sure this beach is a nature reserve?
Well, the sign said nature this way. Hey, what's that big bird over there? Flapping its wings, unusual markings.
You sure that sign didn't say naturists?
Oi, this is a nudist beach.
Ooh. Now, where are my binoculars?
Cheryl?
Struggling to read in the sun? Get 2-for-1 at Specsavers and make prescription sunglasses your second pair. From £70 with standard single vision lenses to the same prescription. Terms and conditions apply. See in store for details.
It's Munich, 1936, and all eyes are on the capital for the upcoming Olympic Games. As athletes fight for gold and the Nazis fight for power, Detective Sebastian Wolf faces a battle of his own in a search that will take him from high society to the city's darkest corners. Wolf is about to learn just how easily the hunter becomes the hunted. Evil in High Places is the gripping new historical thriller from the million copy bestseller Rory Clements. Out now.
Join Andre Rieu at OVO Arena, Wembley, London on 18th of September. Book now at andrerieu.com.
Fever Tree Mediterranean Tonic Water. Who are you? Usually the mixer. The tea in G&T. But your delicate fragrance, hints of lemon thyme, when the tea's this good. Do you even need the G? Fever Tree, straight up or mixed. It's a matter of taste.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
We all have to do our bit, says the Prime Minister, and if we can, undoubtedly we should. But what does that actually mean? William in Alloa. William, what is it? Good morning.
Good morning. I'm reminded of the concept of Wetiko. This is something that American Indians referred to, and it's otherwise referred to as a fear virus. This can infect anyone, individually or collectively, and it's something that forces us or leads us to do things that are not in our self-interest. So we can talk about anti-Semitism or Islamophobia, but these are just aspects of something that is out there. There's these things out there in the thought field. There's memes being shared that present a very certain view of Islam or Judaism or Zionism or Israel, but often behind them is distortion. And for people that resonate within a certain level, they can then take those as gospel and then act on and do things that are not in their self-interest. And this is a topic that invites a lot of opposition.
Okay, so be practical. What does that mean for you, for me, for our listeners? What should they be doing? What do you take from what you've just told me?
What it means is, you know, we know about the Bible. We know about the Quran, but there was a book written in 2013 by a Jewish man called Paul Levy called Dispelling Wetiko, and he talks about how the solution for this psycho-spiritual disease that he says is infecting humanity now more than ever, as people do insane things like targeting innocent people in Golders Green, the solution is radical compassion. It is creativity.
What does radical compassion look like in practical terms? Give me something I can hook onto here.
It means that we have to see this this invisible force that's influencing us to do things for what it is, because once we see it for what it is, we can take the power from it and become the power. And that's why community leaders like the previous person you've had on could be, he even said it, you know, doing interfaith initiatives. And people could look beyond the separation, because it's the separation that this fear virus feeds off of, polarization, fear. And you in the media could be doing more to explain to people a lot of these memes you're seeing that promote certainty are distorted.
Okay, lastly, William, tell me what the media should be doing. I'm asking, by the way, I don't mean that confrontationally. Please tell me what the minister, question mark.
I think you should be coming up with more provocative ideas. Just coming up with Islamophobia or anti-Semitism, this is very old. And you should have Paul Levy on, who's the author of this book, to explain what we can do to transcend these patterns, because they've gone on for thousands of years, and some of this hatred is intergenerational.
We'll leave it there, William. Okay. So we get him, respectfully, that's, you know, one interview on one day. I think this is going to have to be considerably more dedicated than just that. But William, I'm grateful for your input. Thank you. We'll take other ideas. The Prime Minister rightly saying we all need to do our bit, but what does that look like in reality? Raj, you'll be the next caller on that. Let's go to other matters and pressure on the triple lock. Tony Blair's think tank, the Tony Blair Institute, is calling for an end to the state pension triple lock. A spending on the retirement programme looks set to rise by £85 billion. The think tank estimates state pension spending under the triple lock was set to rise to 7.8% of GDP. That's considerably more than we spend on defence, by the way. That is a way few years off by 2070. To remind you, for those of you who don't know, the triple lock ensures the state pension rises by the rate of inflation, average earnings, or 2.5%, whichever is the highest. Right. Let's get details. Tom Smith, Director of Economic Policy at the TBI, Tony Blair Institute, joins me now. Right, Tom, I've read out the headline. What lies behind that headline, and with what would you and your colleagues seek to replace it? Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks, Nick. Yeah, so, I mean, the triple lock is just one aspect of the much more radical overhaul of the system that we're proposing in a new report today. So we think the existing state pensions become outdated and, as you said, increasingly unaffordable. And we're suggesting replacing it with what we call the lifespan fund, which is a more flexible model of income support for longer and more fluid lives.
I like the title already. Lifespan fund sounds much nicer than much. I don't think kids would mind talking about, I need a lifespan fund rather than I need a pension. So how does it work, Tom?
Yeah, so it's got three differences to the current state pension. So first, it's more flexible. So people will be able to access their fund during their working life to help top up their income during temporary periods of lower income, for example, due to unemployment, retraining or caring. So that's the first advantage.
Would they be taxed if they took funds out of it?
They would be, just like now, if you would withdraw your, if your pension and other income is above the sort of personal allowance, then you would be taxed.
Right, yep. Okay, yeah, on you go, yep.
The second is it would be fairer. So instead of access being tied to a single state pension age, which actually discriminates against those with poorer health and shorter lives, people would be able to choose when they retire. And at the point that their fund converts into a guaranteed income for the rest of their life, they would get an annual amount, for the rest of their life, which would be calibrated based on their age and health status, just like an annuity now. So the idea there is that everyone would receive roughly the same amount over their lifespans, equivalent to about 20 years of support at the level of the current state pension. And then just the third aspect would be more affordable. So we've replaced the triple lock with a smooth earnings link, which means that pensioner income would maintain its purchasing power relative to the rest of the economy. And we think that could save almost £70 billion a year by 2070.
Yeah. I was just going to say what sort of money you might be looking for. So it's £70 billion.
Yeah, 66 is the actual number, but yeah, close to 70, yeah.
You're an economist. The politicians, of course, would say, well, that sounds very good, Tom, but that will ensure we'll never get voted in. Isn't that the reality? any government or would-be government, it's political suicide, isn't it?
Well, we hear this a lot. So I think on the triple lock...
Please tell me if I'm wrong. Persuade me that I'm wrong. I'm absolutely open to persuasion.
Well, I think that, so with the triple lock, there is a, you can see this in sort of reporting from people who typically aren't on the front benches, but there's, you know, Jeremy Hunt, Harriet Harman, both sides of the political aisle coming out in recent weeks to say, you know, it's time to sort of revise the triple lock. So I think there is that groundswell of support happening. At the same time, you've got the new, newly re-established Pensions Commission, which is looking into these sort of issues. And back in the early 2000s, the original Pensions Commission, chaired by Adair Turner, that was able to break some of the taboos around raising the state pension aid by forming a cross-party consensus. So I think it's possible that the newly established one could do the same now.
What happens next? You come up with these proposals. Presumably you try and get in front of either ministers or senior opposition ministers. What do you do now and your colleagues do next, Tom?
Yeah, that's right. So, I mean, partly it's coming on
quite some heft with the TBI behind it, so presumably people are ready to listen.
Yeah, no, I think they are. I mean, and it's helpful to have be on here now, so thank you for having us on. But, yeah, we will talk to any party that's interested in these proposals. As I say, we're sort of trying to both replace the triple lock but also provide more flexibility, and we think that is politically saleable because it is giving something back, not just taking something away. So, yeah, we've already seen a bit of a reaction in the media this morning.
Yeah, you've got a lot of headlines because it is a political hot potato. So lastly, away from the politicians, respectfully away from the economists, to pensioners who are listening now to my show saying, oh, my God, there goes my pension. There's that Tony Blair again. He's stealing my pension. What would you say?
Yeah, so that is not what's happening here. So, yeah, the triple lock has already sort of raised the level of the state pension up to about 30% of median earnings, which is a decent bedrock for future retirement. We'd maintain it at exactly that level. So it's not going to fall back. It would just rise with earnings. And so it's not like you're not losing anything relative to now. It's effectively locking in the current level of entitlement forever. But you get something back with this. You get more flexibility. And that's, you know, in some cases, people will be able to retire a little earlier and have that more flexibility to choose. So that's the pitch.
Thanks for your time this morning. Enjoy your weekend. Tom Smith, thank you. Director of Economic Policy at the Tony Blair Institute. If it rises to 7.8% of GDP by 2070, I mean, that is quite a ways off. But it's already at 5.5%, which is considerably more than we spend on defence. But it does, of course, include old age pensions, which people have paid in for all their lives and they deserve. Is this the solution? I've no idea. I'm not an economist. I broadly get how it's going to work. But this has to be tackled in some way, shape or form, doesn't it? We might take calls on that. But I'm asking you, as the Prime Minister says, we all need to do our bit to tackle anti-Semitism. What does that mean to you? Raj in Windsor. Raj, what does it mean to you? Hello, sir.
Good morning, Mr. Parali. Thank you for giving me time.
Not at all.
My philosophy is congregation. In the Hindu religion, says about people coming together. I belong to the Interfaith Forum and the Sacre and so on. So what I say, three pointers are, number one, the money that government has given us, these £10 million, is to use it to hold lots and lots of events where you must include person from every faith and community from every faith, to fund that.
Give me an idea of what sort of events they would be.
Any sort of melas, like in the summer, festivals and get-together, picnics and barbecues and all that, number two would be to have monthly event where people are gathered at each other's places of worship, so that they all come together and say the prayers together. Number three...
And you do these currently, did you say?
Sorry?
Do you do these currently?
Yes, we do. We attend places of worship for Mother Faith, and you go and say prayers, okay? And the third one is for the press and radio and TV to give us publicity to make sure that these events are publicised fully for all the community to get together and know about it.
How popular are they?
They are very popular. Sometimes you get people of around a couple of thousand, places like Ealing Common and places like big parks,
And what do people say afterwards? What do they learn? What are their experiences?
They say that they enjoyed a family day outing with their children. They met other people from other faiths, and they made friends and so on. So it's a very, very successful, very positive event.
Let us know here at LBC. Have you got one coming up soon, Raj?
Yes, I'll come back and let you know about it.
It's not one this weekend or something like that? No. Okay. All right, no, please do. We would definitely give that some coverage. Good luck with what you're trying to achieve there. Raj, thank you. So that's nothing planned for that weekend, but are some of you planning to go away for the holiday weekend?
Come fly with me, let's fly away.
If you can use some exotic booze, there's a bar in far Bombay.
Well, I tell you what, Frank, some passengers, British passengers, probably could have done with some booze because they fainted, missed their flights and endured hours of queues with the EU's EES system. What's gone wrong? We'll look at that after this. It's 9:30. You're listening to Breakfast with me, Nick Ferrara, here on LBC. The news is with Lottie Morley.
The Metropolitan Police Commissioner has told LBC officers are dealing with a pandemic of anti-Semitism in the UK. A man has been charged this morning after two Jewish men were stabbed in Golders Green on Wednesday morning. The UK's terror threat was raised too severe from substantial last night. Private tenants are better protected from today as the Renters' Rights Act comes into force. It marks the end of Section 21 no-fault evictions and tenants with children being refused from properties. And King Charles has arrived in Bermuda after his four-day state visit to the US. He'll spend 3 days on the island, focusing on conservation and biodiversity projects. LBC weather, a warm morning across the UK with lots of sunshine and a high of 24 degrees.
Sunday with Lewis Goodall.
Ahead of next week's mammoth set of local and national elections, we'll be joined by the big hitters from across the major parties asking for your vote. What will it mean for politics where you are, or politics across the UK, and will these elections be the Prime Minister's last? We'll also be looking back on the pageantry and politics of the King's visit to the United States. Has it really changed anything at all? And after the Golders Green stabbing, has anti-Semitic violence become utterly normalised?
Sunday with Lewis Goodall. Sunday morning from 10. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
Fever Tree Ginger Beer. There's no one quite like you, is there? That fiery character. Warming undertones. Mixed, you make a spirited Moscow Mule. But even on your own, you still have the most delectable kick. Fever Tree. Straight up or mixed. It's a matter of taste.
It's like a jungle sometimes. It makes me wonder how I keep on going under.
Get that Toyota electric feeling with the all-new, all-electric Toyota Urban Cruiser. Available with 0% APR representative and £1,500 deposit contribution. And save £1,500 with the Toyota Electrified Saving. Visit your nearest Toyota Centre. Price from £299.95. Available on Toyota PCP when financed through Toyota Financial Services by 30th of June 2026. Optional final payment. Indemnities may be required. See website. Conditions apply.
A box of Abel and Cole fresh organic fruit and veg delivered weekly to your door. Requires washing, peeling and or chopping. Vegetables may come with mud and soil on and very occasionally a ladybird. All produce is grown ethically and with absolutely no artificial pesticides. Delivered without pointless plastic. Increased natural flavours in meals can lead to busier kitchen tables during peak hours, may lead to unexpected enthusiasm for cooking and distaste for processed food alternatives. Abel and Cole. Unprocess your food. Second helping subject to availability.
Take Irish Ferries from Dover to Calais, where your pet travels in the pet lounge. You'd be barking not to. Irish Ferries. See travel differently.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
Yeah, these flight checks, we'll be telling you about those if you've got anything travel planned into Europe, perhaps for this holiday weekend or the other holiday weekend, of course, at the end of this month. More on that in a moment. John's in Croydon. John, the Prime Minister says we must all do our bit. What does that look like to you? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Nick, I will say that you just had the Imam on. And
yes. Tremendous bloke.
He reflected a lot on what was happening in the Middle East and how we can separate Jewish people from that. But he did use a lot of his time to speak of his disagreement there, when this was a time to speak on how we're making Jewish people feel at ease with anti-Semitism that's currently going on and what we're currently doing. So I feel like you missed the mark with that, and that speaks to why this is being proliferated.
But do we not, and obviously we have to tread carefully because we don't know what lies behind the attack in Golders Green, but a lot of this is fuelled by people's inability to detach what the IDF does and the Israeli government does from Jewish people in a synagogue in Manchester or parts of North London. That is right to address that. If that is what the Imam sees, and by the way, I think he's right, as one of the key causes, that must be addressed, John, surely.
No, quite right, and I agree with that. But what I would say is that that distinction is made more a caveat in order to get the mouthpiece in of his disagreement with what's
I don't agree. I thought
okay,
he was
well,
very rational.
Okay, well, let's put that aside then. Let me put that aside then. In terms of how we're bringing this inclusion into communities, he talked about a lot about what the Jewish faith are doing and opening up places so that they could share their iftar and stuff like that. But what are we actually doing from his faith? What, like, a rabbi could have told me that. He's the head of his faith in that area. What's he doing? What I know he's attending meetings. What events is he hosting? What places of worship?
He did tell us that he goes to synagogues to see his Jewish friends. He did.
Because they open up to him, and they are trying to do that for their own protection. What can we do? What can his faith do? What has he done to open up his faith, his place of worship, so as a reciprocal for those kind actions?
Are you saying, and I would urge not in this case, but are you saying that there are other imams who should be doing more, John? Is that what you're driving at, just to clarify?
Potentially, but this imam couldn't point to me to what he was opening up his safe spaces. He could tell me what the rabbis were doing, and he was attending that, fantastic. But what was he actually doing? What was he starting?
All right, okay. Well, I took from my conversation with the imam nothing but a message of positivity and the work that he does. Did I ask him if he opened up his mosque? No, I'm pretty certain he will do, and I would be amazed if there hadn't been one or two. There aren't a lot of rabbis in Leicester. It's not a big Jewish part of the country. I speak from personal experience because I know the city very well. But, OK, John, thank you. Let's see if there's others want to pursue that. Thanks, John. We're going to talk about Triple Lock as well, but I want to get to this other story. What was it like the last time you tried to get into or out of Europe with these new attempts to put in this EES, entry-exit system, from the European Union? Well, one man who undoubtedly will know from first hand, because he's always travelling, is the doyen of travel correspondents, broadcasters and authors, Simon Calder from The Independent. G'day, Simon. When was the last time you went through Europe, and how was it for you, sir?
Well, because I was lucky enough, good morning, Nick, to be going through into Kosovo and out of Albania, it took about 15 seconds going in. I had to see a very nice officer. On the way out, I just used the e-gate, and it took 5 seconds at Tirana Airport. But anybody who is travelling, and we are going in our tens of millions to the European Union and the wider Schengen area this summer, I'm afraid, faces holiday frontier roulette. That is the only word for it. The entry-exit system, which we were told actually 3 weeks ago, had gone into effect 100% everywhere. People know what the rules are supposed to be. We've been talking about it for years. You get the four fingers from your right hand fingerprinted. You get a facial biometric. And then after that, because you've got those registered on the central system, it's just a quick facial biometric. But can you use the e-gates? Do you have to see an officer every time? I've just been speaking to somebody who's been to Frankfurt and back 6 times. And on all but one occasion, he's had his fingerprints taken every time. Oh. You can turn that around and say, well, what about Greece? They've said, if you're British, just show us your passport. That's all we need. We don't care about all those biometric things. The whole thing is a shambles. The sooner that the European Union actually says, this is all a bit of a dog's dinner, so we're going to sort of stumble on through the summer, don't worry too much about those long queues, the better. Because at the moment, people are really worried about missing flights simply because they get caught up in queues. And the Telegraph this morning has an interesting story where they say the delays caused to flights by the border control problems are at their highest since the COVID pandemic.
28,679 minutes, or just under 500 hours, is what that newspaper is reporting, 10 times higher than the previous October's other delay figures. You're right, Greece is revolting, as it were. Also, you probably know the Algarve Hoteliers Association. They say Algarve in Portugal, of course, they say they've had enough, and it is reported Spain is hinting that up with this they will not put. Do you see these cracks just getting ever deeper then, Simon?
Yes, what should have happened, actually, it's now 13 days since Greece went off on one and just said, if you're British, Nick, in you come, don't worry about all that malarkey. And therefore, I imagine first thing Monday morning after that, they would be hauled in to the European Commission, and the whole Greek delegation would be in a meeting without biscuits or indeed coffee and told you can't do this. But they haven't been. And I think that is actually the EU saying, yeah, we can't really do this. If you go, for instance, to London St Pancras International, as I did 2 days ago, you can actually get registered. There's a very nice French police frontier man there, and he took my measurements. He said, don't smile, this is a French system. And I got registered, but then he said, actually, yeah, it's all going to disappear in 6 hours' time. If you go to the port of Dover, to the Eurotunnel terminal, where you've got equally good men and women, French border patrol people, they can't use the system because somebody can't seem to be able, and I'm not sure if you've got any Well, I know you've got excellent engineers there. If they've got a spare soldering iron, they may wish to make their way down to Kent and sort that out. But it's an absolute mess. The European Union Home Affairs Ministry is saying it's all going terribly well. There's just one or two teething problems. No, it's not. They've got to admit that. Then back to square one. And then maybe, you know, a year from now, or more likely going into the winter, they can have another go. But at the moment, it's just causing endless stress and uncertainty just when everybody should be looking forward to their holidays.
Simon, once you've done it, once they've taken your four fingers and a photograph in which you don't smile, is that it? You're then registered. So you should be able to sail through a la old days. But of course, if you're behind a queue of a load of other Brits who've just got off the plane in Mallorca and none of them are done, that's going to speak to the queue. Is that what the problem is?
Well, look, nobody knows. OK, I've learned that it is quite possible to think you have registered and nothing is going on to the central database. That's why you're repeatedly being asked for your fingerprints. You mentioned Mallorca, beautiful Palma airport. Yeah. Things are working actually relatively well there. They'll say, Nick, have you already done the fingerprint thing? Because we think we do have a connection with the database. If so, off you go through the e-gate, as Keir Starmer promised us. However, that is very much the outlier. Don't expect you'll be going anywhere quickly, even if you have registered and there's an airport with e-gates. The chances are you're going to have to queue up and see an officer anyway. It's one of those things where this is being done to us. We've got no control over it, so just hope for the best and be prepared for delays and misery.
Final question. The US, it's similar then to an ESTA, is it? Which the US seemed to manage to run was fairly, it would seem to me, fairly blemish-free, and we just haven't been able to get across it in the European Union. Is that a fair summation, lastly?
That is exactly right, Nick, because you've got 29 different countries each being told, oh, yes, just implement this. And they're all doing it their own way, and it's all going very badly, as opposed to the US, a single country. And now the system is so sophisticated that they will see you, Nick, when you arrive at JFK Airport. They'll get you on the camera as you're queuing up, and they'll say, Nick, welcome to the US. Yeah. Don't need to see your passport. We know who you are. We know what you're doing. In you come. Have a nice day now.
And you have a nice day. Indeed, have a nice holiday weekend if you are getting away. Simon Calder, the legendary Simon Calder, doyen of travel correspondence. You find him in The Independent. We might talk travel. If you have been recently through in and out of Europe, do let us know. Oh, I was going to talk to Stuart about Triple Lock. Is he still with us? No. Oh, I was going to get his views. Come back, get him. We'll talk. Okay, we'll get him back. Okay, so let's talk with Leah in Manchester. If you have been through in or out of Europe, how was it for you? And what about these various national differences? Mallorca, apparently one of the ones that are going really well. In Greece, they've just given it up as a bad job. We'll take calls on that. But Leah's in Manchester to talk about what we all do, as the Prime Minister urges, to combat anti-Semitism. What should we be doing? Good morning.
Hi, good morning. So I'm visibly Jewish. I'm very frightened with what's going on now. And I would just say, I think everybody just has to show visibly their support for Jewish people, whether that means putting a sign in your window, putting a sticker on your car, smiling at Jewish people. Let them know, you know, you meet a Jewish person, let them know you support them, you're not along with this. And yep. I would say particular responsibility for all these people who go on the marches and are very vehement that they are not anti-Semitic. I think these people have a responsibility to the Jewish community to let them know, we want you here, we support you, and we don't agree with what's going on.
How widespread would that be? Would there, as unfortunately Jewish people are concerned to wear the Star of David or to wear the yarmulkes or whatever, the kippahs, are people going to put stickers in their windows? What do you think? They should
no,
be able
I would
to,
say
but
non-Jewish
I
want to see non-Jewish people.
No. Would non-Jewish people do it? Yes.
To say, you think they'd be frightened to say, I support the Jewish community?
Yeah, what I'm saying is, if Jewish people are now so concerned that they don't wear their Star of David, are non-Jewish people going to say, I tell you what, I'm going to put a post in my window saying how much I love my Jewish community? That's what I'm trying to ask you. Do you think they would do it?
I don't know, but I would say, if society is at a stage where people can't do that, we've all got to be frightened, not just the Jewish community.
Yeah, well, they do say, of course, isn't it anti-Semitism? It's the, what is it, the canary in the coal mine or something? It's the first one that gets it. It's the oldest form of prejudice, isn't it? Leah, thank you. An idea. Let's see what others make of it. And we will talk Triple Lock as well after this. 9:45, LBC News headlines. Lottie Morley.
The Metropolitan Police Commissioner, Sir Mark Rowley, has told LBC officers are dealing with a pandemic of anti-Semitism. Private tenants are better protected from today as the Renters' Rights Act comes into force. And King Charles has arrived in Bermuda after his four-day state visit to the US. LBC weather, a warm morning across the UK with lots of sunshine and a high of 24 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. There are delays on the M1 northbound at the London Gateway services. There's been an accident and only one lane is open. Still very slow in Fulham on Dawes Road going westbound, and that's because of an ongoing investigation. In Camden, Chalk Farm Road is now partially blocked southbound. A bus has broken down. And in Earls Court, it's very busy on the Earls Court Road southbound after an accident, but all the lanes are now back open. On the Underground, there are severe delays on the Piccadilly line. That's the entire line. It was after that signal failure that happened early this morning at King's Cross. Better news on the District line. It's now minor delays between Barking and Upminster after those fire alarms went off earlier.
This is LBC.
At Amazon, over 50% of deliveries now come with less packaging or with no added packaging at all. It's a difference you'll notice on your doorstep, where you chat with friends, where your neighbour's daughter practices guitar, and where we deliver your new noise-cancelling headphones in the manufacturer's packaging. Ah, much better. Reduced packaging from Amazon. We're delivering change where it matters. On your doorstep. Based on 2025 Amazon packaging data across the UK and EU.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060973. LBC.
Calling all young creatives. It's time to get prepped for the sports media industry. And where better than Global Academy? Here's Niamh, a sports media student in Year 12.
During class, I've edited football videos for social, reported on games, and even produced my own highlight packages. Working directly with the industry makes me excited for my future career in sports broadcasting.
Global Academy. Apply now and join us in Years 10 or 12. GlobalAcademy.com.
Fancy a trip to France without the fancy price tag? Go all Irish. With great low prices, travel from Dover to Calais with Irish Ferries and you'll have France at your feet in 90 minutes. Can-can. Less. More money, less money. You get the picture. Get a warm Irish welcome on board and a cool pint of the black stuff on us. Zero alcohol, of course, when you book direct at irishferries.com. Escargot on, then. Irish Ferries. See travel differently. T's and C's apply.
3, 2, 1, 0% APR and all electric Mini Cooper. What was that, Luton? Handling is extraordinary. Centre of gravity so low. And it could be ours with a 15% deposit and 3-year term.
Okay, Luton, reroute me to the nearest Mini retailer now.
Land a new all-electric Mini Cooper with 0% APR. Report to your Mini retailer today. Mini UK is a credit broker. Ordered and delivered by 30th of June. PCP finance with Mini Financial Services. Subject to status. 18 plus. T's and C's apply. Mini.co.uk/Cooper.
Shine Night Walk London is a 10K, half marathon or full marathon supported walk around the city at night on the 19th of September to raise vital money for Cancer Research UK. It's also...
everyone walking with all their colours, twinkling away.
We can actually see how nice London is. And London is different at night time.
Celebration of life, and it gives hope.
Step towards a brighter future at shinewalk.org today to get 30% off your entry. Together, we are beating cancer. T's and C's apply.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
When a passport isn't a passport, because you cannot get past. Pete in Chippenham. What happened to you, Pete? Good morning.
Hello, Nick. Hello. Returned from, I'm going to say, a boys' weekend in Benidorm. Alicante, as a seasoned traveller, worldwide seasoned traveller, this was giving me more... worry whether I wouldn't be able to get in because of this system than ever. Mm-hmm. But I left Bristol on... one of the last flights out to Alicante, got to Alicante, breezed through. It was my first time going to Europe. New city, absolute breeze. Plane was full, and there was a couple of members of staff there, spoke perfect English, and I didn't see any problem at all. The system took me in, and returning on the very first flight from Bristol on Wednesday morning, 7 o'clock, Alicante Airport, same thing. Absolutely.
So what are we saying here? We're going to put it down to each country's way of implementing it then, because clearly we heard it was good in Mallorca, which is also Spain. It was good in Alicante. Greece, they've just had to put their hands up in the air and they've given up. Portugal, you've got the Algarve Hotelers Association saying it's a disaster. It clearly goes country by country, doesn't it?
I think it's attitude to English people spending, British people spending their money.
Right.
People get a lot of trouble getting, for instance, to Benidorm. I'm not sure if you've been there. It's only my second trip. And
I've
not
only
sure
ever been there once, and it was for work.
And once is sometimes enough. If they start making it so difficult that people say, oh, I can't be bothered, they'll just go somewhere else. And the amount of British people or people from, well, it's mainly British, going to Alicante on their way to Benidorm or indeed staying in Alicante, they just want to make it difficult.
Yeah, that's not fair, is it? Okay.
Well,
now you're done, if you'll allow that expression. Now you've been... Is that it? Next time you go to Frankfurt or you go to Nice or you go to wherever you might go, Schiphol, you'll just sail straight through?
That's the inference, yeah. I mean, I've had two returning Esters to the USA for business, and the first time I went to the USA on business, it was the same thing. It was the fingerprint scan, the eye scan, the chat with the guy with the gun. And that was it. Every other time I breathed in and out. It's no different to the Esther system. But as you said, the United States, they're all pulling in the same direction, where personally, I don't think the EU is.
I think that might be one of the problems. Yeah, because as Simon Calder rightly said, and we can all work that out, the United States is one nation. And unfortunately, as regards the implementation of this with the European Union, there's more than two dozen of them. Pete, thank you. Nigel's in Calais. Hello, Nigel. Are you going out or coming back? Good morning.
I'm coming back in this morning and going back out this afternoon.
Oh, mate. What is it you drive?
I just drive an Arctic, obviously, a fridge van. We come into England two or three times a week.
Right. Can I ask what you've got on board?
Milkshakes.
Good on you. And what are you taking back into Europe once you've dropped off your milkshakes?
We go back out empty.
Oh,
we
right.
go, it's all for McDonald's.
Oh, right. So where have you got to go once you've dropped off your milkshakes? Where have you got to go? Into France or further afield?
We go anywhere, really, but at the moment it's mainly Holland, Germany, France,
loving it.
Belgium.
I'm loving it. What's it? You see what I did there? What's it like getting in and out of Europe as a professional driver, Nigel?
Absolute nightmare. Oh. Every single time we come into Calais or come into Dover, we have to have fingerprints, photographs taken, and it can cost us up two or three, 4 hours.
Oh, my goodness.
I mean, I've been sat in the queue now, like, an hour and a half now, waiting to get to the French customs.
And are you on a ferry? Yeah, you'll be on the ferry then, are you? Because the train...
We're on the Euro tunnel.
Oh, you're on the tunnel. Okay, so have you got a set time that you have to be on board?
Well, it's an open booking for the train, but we have set times in England to deliver it.
Right. And what seems to be the main problem? Once you've been done, you're not done. You have to do it every time.
Every single time in England and in France, every single time it's fingerprints, right hands, photograph taken. I mean, surely, once they've got your picture and your fingerprints, you should be able to sail through.
I mean, obviously, I don't know if you ever travel to America for holidays or anything, but once you're done in America, you're done. That's it. You're in.
Exactly.
Oh, God. All right, listen, I hope you go. What time have you got to be? Where have you got to be and when this afternoon?
I'm supposed to be in Luton for 12 o'clock.
Well, that ain't going to happen, mate, in a million
years. No, of course it isn't. And the other thing I wanted to say is... They're putting this 90-day rule on for 90 days in Europe, and you can't go into Europe after that for 90 days.
Mm.
So how do we go on as lorry drivers?
Well, I don't know. How are you going on as a lorry driver?
Exactly. Night? It's all up in the air. I mean, the airline pilots and ship's captains and stuff have all got a visa, but they won't give us one.
Look after yourself. Stay in touch. How far away how far are you away from the top of the queue, do you think? Nice.
Well, I can't even see the booths at the moment. I've been here, so another hour and a half.
Oh, you poor bloke. Safe driving. Gosh, you've just got to have a certain mindset to cope with that, haven't you? I could not do... Well, I haven't got the ability to drive a lorry. That's the first most important thing. Secondly, I just don't have that level of patience. Janice is in Buckhurst Hill. What happened to you, Janice, and where? Good morning.
Hi, I flew in from Valencia yesterday afternoon.
Yes.
It was, you went through security and then you went to your gate, and there were two lots of gates, separate machines you had to go to. So there was quite a queue, but it wasn't too bad. The right. first set of machines were fine. The second set of machines, there were about 10 of them, but 8 of them were out of action.
Right.
Oh, only 2 were working. To be fair to them in Valencia, they did take us away from the queue, and they did it manually, you know, with right. a person.
Okay.
But the machines were very, very slow. It took ages for each person on the machine.
Pardon my ignorance, Janice. Do you have to get your passport stamped in and out still?
Mine wasn't stamped, but I went to Lanzarote in February, and we had to do all the machines. Then we had to queue up again to get our passport stamped.
Right.
But we didn't yesterday in Valencia.
Right. I don't understand. Mallorca, as we were hearing from Simon Calder, you can sail straight through, and yet Valencia is... It does seem to be how it's been implemented, isn't it? By not necessarily each country now, possibly each airport or port. Janice, thank you. Shall we talk a little bit about triple lock? Now, this idea from the Tony Blair Institute that it should be done away with. Now, it would be replaced by something that's called a lifespan fund. They stress that there would be no financial loss for any of the pensioners who are currently in it, but they talk of savings of £70 billion. Dominic's in Bury. Dominic, your take on this. Good morning.
Good morning, Nick.
Hello.
Nice to be on.
Good to have you on, sir. Does this make sense to you?
No. Uh-oh. I'm sorry, but the triple lock is here for the old age pension.
Yes, it is. Yes, absolutely.
And it was there because the pensions were being left out each year. They were getting less and less, and the pension was worth less and less each year.
Yes.
They couldn't afford to do anything. So it would only affect, again, the poor pensioners. It wouldn't affect the MPs, the Lords, and anybody else who's in government who gets a index-linked pension for life.
Now, triple lock is it. Sorry to talk over you, but triple lock is index linked, is inflation linked.
Not as much as the MPs, I'm sorry.
No, but the way it works, the state pension will rise by the rate of inflation, average earnings, or 2.5%, whichever is the highest. So it is tied into inflation.
It is.
Yes.
But not at the same rate. I'm sorry, but I don't believe that they use the same calculations for the MPs.
All right. When you realise that we're going to
Nick, just one second.
Go on.
If the MPs took the same amount of pension rights as the ordinary pensioner, how many billions would we save?
I don't know.
Neither do I, but no. It would be nice to find out, wouldn't it?
Well, if you want to talk money, the spending on retirement will rise by £85 billion over the next 20 years, and it would be nearly 8% of our GDP. Now, many argue that is not sustainable, Dominic.
I know, yes, I understand that, Nick, and there must be another way, yes, I understand. But it seems to me that the people in government make all these decisions, but right. not for themselves.
Okay, I hear what you're saying. It's probably my fault. I've not. This is only a well, it's not even a recommendation. Well, I suppose it is a recommendation. It's a work from a think tank. So, although Tony Blair's name is attached to, do not think this has become policy. It has not. It is something that's discussed. There are active conversations about how long we can maintain the triple lock as it currently is. But I hear what you say, that there is a degree. Of course, you look across at parliamentarians and you have a slightly different view. You had the last word of the week. If you missed any of today's show, listen back on our free Global Player app or the LBC app, where you can stay up to date with all the latest news, videos and opinions. Download the app for free from your app store now. That's me done for the bank holiday weekend. James O'Brien is the other side of the news here on LBC. I'm back with you Tuesday morning from 7. Meantime, do have a very safe bank holiday weekend.
Thank you, Nick. You too. I do find it increasingly frustrating that you can say almost nothing with certainty these days. I'm sure it didn't used to be like that. In the aftermath of that attack in Golders Green, you would have thought that there would be unanimous praise and admiration for the police officers who apprehended the suspect. And the more you learn about the circumstances in which that was undertaken, the more admiration, praise and gratitude you think would be forthcoming. And I honestly think that if you had told me at Wednesday lunchtime that they would, that the officers involved would come in for some quite high-profile criticism, I don't think I would have believed you. But it might be deserved.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, the Metropolitan Police Commissioner has told LBC officers are dealing with a pandemic of anti-Semitism in the UK. A man has been charged with attempted murder this morning after two Jewish men were attacked in Golders Green on Wednesday. Sir Mark Rowley has said we've seen a rise in attacks recently, but the issue has been building for years.
The sustained series of arsons we've seen, and then this horrific attack on Wednesday night, awful for the victims and their families. It's very much targeted at Jewish communities. I think we have to recognise that what police are dealing with and what we're trying to protect communities against, we're dealing with the symptoms of a disease, of a pandemic perhaps, of anti-Semitism.
The UK's terror threat level was raised from substantial to severe yesterday. Essa Suleiman, who's 45, will appear at Westminster Magistrates Court later. The Housing Secretary says he's calling time on rogue landlords as the new Renters' Rights Act comes in. Steve Reed says the updated rules will give renters the security and dignity they deserve. It's being described as the biggest shake-up to renting for more than 30 years and marks the end of no-fault evictions. Emily rents a property in Devon and has recently been subject to one.
In the long term, it might help renters and their rights have a bit more security, so they can't just be told to leave their house for no reason. So hopefully in the long run, it'll be positive. But at the minute, yeah, it's not great.
You can read the Housing Secretary's exclusive piece on the LBC app. A think tank is calling for the triple lock pension to be replaced with a system which allows people to access cash earlier in life. The Tony Blair Institute says the current scheme is outdated and increasingly unaffordable. It's arguing for a new lifespan fund to be established instead. And Britney Spears has been charged with driving under the influence in Southern California. She was stopped by police in March. Her lawyers are likely to appear in court for her on Monday. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading down 61 points at 10,316. The pound buys $1.36 and a euro 16. LBC weather, warm and sunny across the UK this morning. A few showers moving eastwards later and a high of 24 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Lottie Morley.
Get that Euro Millions feeling with Friday's £34 million jackpot. Plus, 10 UK winners are guaranteed to be millionaires. That's 10 more reasons to dance. 10 more robots, 10 more limbos, 10 more salsas. Friday's Euro Millions jackpot is £34 million. And 10 UK winners are guaranteed to be millionaires. Euro Millions from the National Lottery. It could be you. Estimated jackpot. Rules apply. 18 plus.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
Three minutes after 10, so at risk of sounding pompous, let me rephrase that. At risk of sounding unintentionally pompous, I see our programme, the programme that we make together every day, I see it in part, and only in a very small way, as pushing back against some of the dominant and very dishonest narratives. Wherever you choose to begin, whether it's in the obvious place, 10 years ago, almost to the day, or whether it is in less obvious positions, my personal discovery that the industry I had dreamt of joining since being in short trousers was riven with sycophancy, moral corruption, and shills. But I'd see our role, or not our role, that's too pompous even for me, I'd see our programme, and it is our programme, as pushing back a little bit against the very dominant narratives that our media is dominated by, because the people that own our media want it to be dominated by those narratives. So just a quick and very recent example, there is going to be a shift from attacking migrants to attacking welfare claimants, people on benefits, including sickness and disability benefits. There was a hideous story in the news yesterday. I didn't get around to sharing with you about an increase in the abuse being directed at people using bona fide users of blue badges to denote a disability when they park their vehicle. Because the same people that sold you Brexit and racism are now selling you the idea that everybody who has got a blue badge in the back of their car is either a fraudster or a liar or both. So those are the things that we push back against. Those are examples of things that we push back against. So when the Daily Mail started describing the Green Party as the Green Menace, And posting regularly on any story looking at the Green Party and looking at its leader, Zach Polanski, with a specially designed little, what would you call it, graphic? A specially designed little graphic. Beware the green menace, and green menace is in green. with a sort of weird effect on it, as if someone has been scratching at the words with their fingernails. Beware the green menace. You feel, or I find myself feeling, that, well, that's something we should be keeping an eye on. That is something that probably gets filed under the elements of discourse that we see ourselves pushing back against. You know, give them a chance, give them an even break. And I intend to. I'm just sharing all of this with you because I want you for what it's worth, for the people who care about such things, I want you to have a full understanding of the context of the question that I am about to ask you. So I've been watching the rise of the Green Party and the by-election success in Gorton and Denton and the media savviness, I think I would say, of the leader, Zach Polanski, and the attempt by some members of this profession to either minimise, demonise or denigrate him, a little bit too much focus on his previous career as a hypnotist, when he made some slightly questionable claims, I think it's fair to say. But I don't know why you would focus on that more than you would focus on other things that don't involve sort of hatred, discrimination, racism, anti-Semitism from people's past. So I've got a watching brief. I have concerns, I suppose I have hopes and concerns about all new political faces and new political movements that don't appear to be part of the continent's lurch towards the far right. Okay? I just want to get that out there. I really want to get that established. Okay? Because when the chief of the Metropolitan Police slaps down a politician, I also find my natural impulses leaning in ways that are kind of, well, I'd normally worry, particularly if it's a politician from the left, because you somewhat lazily, and this is a little bit undergraduate, I don't apologise for that, I'm being completely honest with you. I kind of find myself thinking, oh, you've got an authoritarian police officer swinging at a left-leaning politician. That rarely ends well. But I like Mark Rowley. I mean, you can sue me for that if you want. I like his style. I really don't like his refusal to use the word institutional when describing the racism that every single report and inquiry into the Metropolitan Police Service has established, and proof of which is provided, it sometimes feels, on an almost daily basis. And yet, I think he has got it entirely right today. I can't quite believe that anybody, let alone somebody who is currently enjoying at some time in the political sun, would choose to share or indulge in criticism of the officers that apprehended the 45-year-old man who has now been charged with attempted murder after the Golders Green attack, a fact, a simple matter of fact that means we can and will say no more about it. We will say no more about it because of, I mean, rather obvious legal reasons. And I mean no more about it, so we don't need to refer back to that at all. We refer entirely to